This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for tout, or is it like part of the program?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
I'm just kidding.
The man you see and the place to be.
Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
I'm not the one who thrives on whining about carriages that are 3 inches from my fucking car.
So if it's too much for you and your big cock of the walk Knights of Columbus backpack.
When does it end, JR?
When does it end? Back to the fucking thing. Then what do you want? What do you want?
When does it end?
You're making the poor guy making minimum wage while you're sitting there with our mento going through the coffers.
Party people in the place to be.
5 years. 5 years we've been doing podcasts, and we have this. This is trash.
It's not Austin in L.A. It's not Cabana in Chicago. It's not Conrad down in Alabama. Place to Be Nation presents Scott Criscolo and JT Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the auxiliary PTBN studio. Scott Criscolo, my PIC, joining me as we begin our ninth year of action here in the Place to Be podcast. And Scott, I'm at the little countertop that we were at last week because my basement's still nearing finishing construction, but my studio is still asunder. So here we are tonight in the aux. I don't know how the acoustics are in the spot. I don't know if it's the same, any better. How do I sound?
Pretty much the same. I can kind of tell that you're in the kitchen. Well, probably because I know, because I was 1 week ago, I was sitting there, but it actually sounds no different. So it's
okay.
Good.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. JR, always a pleasure. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 513 of the longest running motherfucking gold standard on this President's Day here in the United States of fine America. JR got a little white stuff today. A little white stuff.
Oh, yeah? Having a little party over there?
A little white stuff, yeah. Speaking
right.
of Dusty Rhodes.
No, fired up for this 89.
Hey! Yeah, oh, no, sure. 89. In 89, there was a lot of it going around back in the garden. But yeah, you got a little snow today. Nothing came down here, though. We're supposed to get a front. I think we're supposed to get some down here Wednesday. I don't know what you're supposed to have. But
yeah, the same. And Mr. Diamato will be here for the big St. John's Friars game. So
that's right, yes.
He's amending his driving schedule, it looks like. Yeah. But yeah, we ended up – I'm tired. We ended up sledding today, and we did that for a while. So that it was fun. I had a good time, but I definitely was worn out. And then we had these plans to go to Dave and Buster's with my kids and all like my cousin's kids as like their Christmas gift. So it was like sledding, ate pizza at Don's house, came home for like an hour, showered, and then turned back around, ate an Uno. I didn't know we were like – we thought we may cancel because of the snow, and then we ended up doing it. So I ate like twice within like 4 hours, not even, and then on to Dave and Buster's for that shit show. But did you do anything on this fine President's Day?
Nah, not much really. Very quiet, low-key. I ran some errands. Pretty much it. Watched TV. Nothing too crazy. Get back to work tomorrow after having the week off. And yeah, it was good to see you again last week as we were, of course, together with the special birthday show and getting all the incredible tapes together, which maybe you'll be pulling out for the GWWE Greatest Matches. you never know with all those. It's going to be some match hiding around those
pins. Label them and ship them over to me from London.
Anyway, JR, always a pleasure for year 9. And we are back in the saddle. For another fantastic house show from the big city. But speaking of the state of New York, JR, a debut this evening and a gentleman that lives in the state of New York. Let's bring him in.
He does. He does live in the state of New York. He is also the host of the Sportscasters podcast, and we'll talk about that in a little bit because something new going down there. He's a co-host of the Adams Division podcast, our buddy Peter Winson. He is a longtime fan of the Place to Be podcast. He's heard every episode, Die Hard, so we are thrilled to have him here tonight, and that is our good friend, the king of the shit take himself, Mr. Steve Bennett. Steven, how are you?
What's up, fellas? How you doing?
Good.
I've got all the shit take. I got the shit take polished up and ready for Ready for place to be consumption. No, but I am curious. Like, give me a few of them. Like, what are a few of the shittiest of the shit takes?
Oh, I don't keep track of the shit takes. I mean, I don't keep
track. There's got to be, like, one or two that jump out, no?
No, I mean, if I go listen back to that, your either GWE list pod on the Adams Division or, like, those, that's where they really are just growing in droves. Between you and Winston, it's a shit take storm. I can't even dodge them all.
Well, I know you were frustrated with my ranking of Rick Rude for some reason.
Yeah, did you have him too high? Was that what it was?
Yeah, and I think I gave him too much credit, in your opinion, for the matches which he's universally given credit for against
well, no,
Delta
see,
Warrior.
Now my Rick Rude take.
Brunt of that.
Well, that's because that was right in my throes of like us watching like I think early Rude here, and I just haven't seen it. Like we're getting a little bit more of his good stuff, but I just think he gets too much credit for those Warrior matches. I think at the very least it should be 50-50. Like, I think it's always like, oh, he carried Warrior. But I think Warrior's big match record is better than Rude's in the WWF.
Well, you know, when you look at the Warrior's big matches, I mean, they're against Rick Rude and Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan, right? I mean, those are the guys.
Yeah, but he's still carrying. So, he's not. You're telling me Hulk Hogan's carrying him? I mean, I think he's 50-50 in all those matches. That's my take. That's my stance. And Rude,
I agree.
Like, so what are Rude's other big matches?
Not tonight.
No, tonight is not one. I think, you know, like, my point is that, like, not to get too down into the Rick Rude career path, because, you know, whatever for Rick Rude. But my point, I guess, was just that universally it seems that that's generally the opinion. And I got crushed for it. And I'm cool with, like, the ball busting. It's fun. And, like, we... Like, you know, I think we have a pretty cool relationship. Like, we'll chat about shit and we'll shit talk other people, like, in private and stuff. We have fun and all that. The only negative to it is I feel like in the chat, though, my reputation is that I'm this, like, idiot. You know, like, I feel like I'm, like, you know, a big blubbering fool. And anytime I have an opinion of anything, everyone, like, it's like, oh, there's the shit.
So you feel like I set you up for this
yeah,
path?
Yeah, because you have such credibility. You know, being one of the main men, and you know, you're a made man in that group, that you set me down this road of, like, you know, I feel like I got buried by John Cena in my first big pay-per-view or something. You know what I mean? And I just can't crawl out of the hole. You know, I'm like Rusev in the canyon at WrestleMania. You know what I mean? Like, I came out in the canyon and I'm with Lana, and then Cena buried me, and I'm screwed forever now.
So shall
that's
I write
the only negative?
Shall I write Bennett as poopy on your Facebook page? Is that what
Yeah, you might as well.
You're going to come out. Well, tonight's your chance to get out of it.
Yeah,
so there we
we'll
go.
Just deliver some original non-shit takes tonight. We'll turn the tide.
So just don't start humming like Yellow Ledbetter or something, okay? That's the last thing we need.
That's for the end. Everything ends with Yellow Ledbetter. Nope.
All right, Steve.
Yeah,
well,
so one thing I want to tell you guys. Yeah, so I want to tell you how I found you guys.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of cool.
I like origin
stories. Kind of
a cool
story. Yeah, so... 1 year for Christmas, I got, like, I was like, didn't have anything I really wanted. So I was like, you know what? I haven't really played any video games in a while. So how about, like, getting me the NHL or Madden or whatever this year? So someone got them for me, and I was playing them. And I hate the music, and I hate the talking and video games. So I was listening to podcasts or sports radio or something, and I had nothing. This is, like, the middle of Christmas break. I had exhausted everything. So I was like, I'm going to do an iTunes search for WrestleMania 3 and see if there's any reviews of WrestleMania 3. And you guys popped up. But it was like episode, you know, like 16, 17, something like that. And I'm like, oh my God, these guys not only have WrestleMania 3, they have 1 and 2 and SummerSlam 88. And I'm like, this is good. So that's how I found you guys. And I was listening, well, ever since. And that was probably like, I don't know, 2012 or 13, something like that. You guys had comfortably broken into the 90s by then in their reviews. So, but yeah, that's how I found you guys. So I guess it's maybe not as good of a story as I let on, but anyway.
I like it. It's a good story, and you've been with us for a long time. It illustrates that point, so that's a good point. And I definitely remember you tweeting at us and other stuff for a while, too, before you were kind of formally came into the group and more of an active participant. So I definitely remember that part of it, and I didn't think your shit takes were too prolific at that point. But anyway,
as you know,
I've been
an
emerging
Steve,
shit taker. Yes.
Well, as you know, Steve, in those chats, there are people whose shit takes are much shittier. So you're not all the way at the bottom of the barrel. There's others that are worse. So anyway, gentlemen, Yes. Steve, for your debut this evening, we had a what I think may end up being a pretty decent show. For the first time, JR, in about a month, we head to our offices on 33rd and 6th. The date is January 23rd, 1989, live from, of course, Madison Square Garden in New York City. Now, of course, JR, for those that know, like Mr. D'Amato and a few of us, remember, we go through a couple-year stretch where we won't have a myriad of MSG shows like we did in the last couple years, because MSG does go through some renovations. So the house shows will be – I mean, there's still going to be a decent amount of house shows, but not as many. We won't be monthly probably ever again, really, but we'll be hustling through the summer. But clearly here in the winter – and the fall will definitely be very house show heavy, but we will have some gaps over the next couple of years where we won't be at the Garden as much. As for the roster, split into threes again. And the other two thirds are not even close to where we are. One show house show on this evening from a couple of old school NBA haunts on this Monday evening. We are at the Salt Palace in Salt Lake City, the old home of the Jazz. Before the Delta Center and now the whatever it's called, the Waste Management Center, whatever the heck it's called now.
That sounds like a strip club for obese people. The Salt Palace. The
Salt Palace.
Come check your cholesterol and get a free dance.
Lap dance and sauna at the Salt Palace. 4,200 there. Here's your card. Ron Garvin defeated Barry Horowitz. Big John Studd defeated Akeem via countout, which, let's be honest, JR, is, in your eyes, very criminal. The Blue Blazer pinned Boris Zhukov. Our WWF World Heavyweight Champion, Randy the Macho Man Savage, continued his feud with Bad News Brown. He actually pinned him, which we never see much on TV. The Bushwhackers defeated the Rougeaus. And finally, in the main event, your Intercontinental Champion, the Ultimate Warrior, defeated King Haku. Not a bad show. The other third of the roster was in Mr. Todd Weber's backyard, the old Arco Arena in Sacramento. Actually, it's the newer Arco Arena, not the new building, but the building they played in, the Kings played in pretty much for the next 15 years from here. Here's your card. Coco Beware took on Boris Zhukov. We don't have results here, but Graham Zhukov on courtesy. I almost called him Graham Zhukov. I think that's what he uses at hotels. at thehistoryofwwe.com. Jim Neidhart took on Greg Valentine. Ooh. Hacksaw Jim Duggan took on Dino Bravo. Ooh. Sorry, Todd. Your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, Demolition, taking on the Powers of Pain. And finally, Jake the Snake Roberts took on Andre the Giant. So as you can tell, guys, we have no title matches on our show this evening. All the belts were in other buildings. But we do have one guy. There was one name you did not hear in either of those two matches because we have him tonight. And we'll get to him later on. Your announcers, Ron Trongard, who's on a roll, although I think he's slowly coming to an end. I don't think this is his last show.
No, he's around a little bit longer.
I think he's around a little bit longer, but he's getting close to the end. And Lord Alpha.
Possibly he has dementia, too. I mean, he gets like 35 names wrong in this show.
He does get a lot of place. Yeah,
maybe. Yeah, the toupee must be... It must be getting tight.
Him and Lord Alfred are definitely got like a bottle of something below the table. I mean, they're both out there tonight.
Yeah, and usually Alfred. Well, we'll get to it. But Alfred usually has some good quips. But he's got some like usually, you know. There's no Lanny Poffo for him to call supple. But he's got a few very questionable comments tonight on a few people. Yes. So we have Ron Trongard and Lord Alfred. JR, any tidbits before we begin?
Yeah, we got Jayla on third stage serving salami sandwiches here at the Salt Palace.
Woohoo!
Head on over there.
Sandwiches!
I was just trying to think of something really salty. All right. So we got a couple notes, and that's about it. Since the Royal Rumble, when we last talked on the January 16th, 89 primetime, Red Rooster was an in-studio guest for the show, which Bobby Heenan and the Rooster were about to shake hands to go their separate ways, but Steve Lombardi, the jobber, came on the set, hit Rooster and Gorilla Monsoon, who was sitting there with a stool. And later in the episode, Heenan refers to Lombardi by his new ring name, the Brooklyn Brawler. And, of course, they threw a locker down on the Rooster and really kind of laid it into him. So Red Rooster now is officially turned. We had talked about it a bit in our last couple shows, but it's official now. And Steve Lombardi looks like he's getting a touch of a push. On the 121 Superstars, Andre the Giant and Bobby Heenan were guests of the Brother Love Show, which Brother Love brought out a snake inside a bag to prove that Andre wasn't afraid, but Heenan and Andre would not let, or Andre would not let him open the bag. So maybe a failed attempt there. And then finally, world champion Randy Savage defeated Akeem by disqualification in a non-title match. Boss Man interfered after Savage hit the flying elbow smash. Hulk Hogan made the save and slammed both Twin Towers. So more to come from those folk soon enough. So we head inside the Garden where Rod and Al welcome us in, set the stage for tonight's card. And the opener is Sam Houston taking on Dangerous Danny Davis, a big rematch from last January in this very arena that we saw.
Big rematch from 1 year ago.
Right, the building, or all around the country. They've been hyping it up all for this one night. Maybe after the match, they say Houston was like, I'll see you 1 year from tonight. Danny's like, yes, I'll be here. And there they were. Davis still hanging on. Al calls Sam a long, lanky lad, and Davis uses a lot of psychological ploys. So he's playing some categories tonight, trying to get as many points as he can. Davis begs off and stalls to get started. Al says Danny's tights make him look a little bit slimmer than he actually is. As Rod says, Sam ain't going to stand for any monkey business. Sam smacks Danny. We get some more mind games and nonsense. Sam works a side headlock for a bit. Davis breaks it with a back suplex. Davis gets to work on the head and neck with some simple offense, grabbing a near fall. Davis slingshots Sam into the bottom rope, and Sam twitch shells his leg in an odd bit. Danny chucks him hard outside and keeps stomping away here and there until Sam finally fires up and gets back inside with a flurry of offense to rally the crowd. Sam whiffs out a back elbow and eats a hard clothesline but stays alive. Davis hooks a Boston Crab, but Houston eventually battles back with a bulldog for the win. This is fine. They kept the short, thankfully. Got moving a bit after all the stalling, and I thought the crowd was actually into the finish. I thought Houston showed enough fire here to make it worthwhile. He's still not going anywhere, but if you're going to have him in these opening low-card stuff, like at least he's somewhat serviceable. Davis is not. He's clearly on borrowed time. He is so stale and just past his point of usefulness at this point. So I want to star on this, Scott.
Yeah, your match time, you thought it was short. 9:39 was your match time.
Yeah, well, some of these openers go like 15 to 20 sometimes with the fucking draws and all that shit. So, I mean, it was whatever. Yeah. Under 10 to me is short enough on these shows.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. I gave it a star as well. First off, I had no idea Danny Davis was even still with the company at this point. I pretty much thought he was gone into the 10 in the 88. The match was fine. I thought they went through their paces pretty well. Nothing criminal. Good opener. Crowd was okay. I mean, they were still filing in. The problem, and I know, Steve, you'll probably mention it in a minute. Sometimes these matches that kind of have no direction or no backstory is when Ron and Alfred are at their worst because they're trying to, like, invent commentary. And sometimes they struggle a little bit. They're better off, like, when we have matches later on where there's some, like, you know, definitive backstory. They're a lot better because they have something to go off of. When they got to try and pull it out of their heads, they're not Gorilla and Jesse or Gorilla, even Gorilla and Mean Gene. They're definitely not as good. Because I feel like Trongar doesn't watch anything except when he shows up and sits down. So I don't even think he realizes what's going on in the company storyline-wise.
Right. No.
I think he just shows up, sits, and talks. So particularly when you're in these situations where there's no backstory and he's kind of pulling shit out of his ass, it's difficult. But yeah, I agree, JR. The match was fine. It was nothing really offensive about it. It kind of went through the motions, but Danny Davis just looks like such a loser now at this point. He seems to be another kind of old guard guy where this, you know, we've talked about it the last few shows where the roster's really starting to show its own in terms of good wrestling ability, and bums like him just don't fit anymore. You know, he doesn't even have Jimmy Hart to be a heat magnet, so at least Sam Houston's a serviceable guy and he can make a match look halfway decent. So, I mean, it was fine, Steve. Decent opener, one star for me. Good, you know, pretty average way to get the show going.
Yeah, you know, it happened in 1987, and I know I got to let it go since I'm like a 38-year-old man with a child and a wife now, but I'm still pissed at Danny Davis for that Robert Foundation Bulldog. Like, as soon as I see his smug face, like, I'm just like, that was bullshit reffing, you know, like, you let him double-team Davy Boy, that was bullshit. And, you know, I should probably let it go. It's been a long time. But Davis is great at being smug. Very slappable face. I'll give him that. I have no clue why he broke the Boston Crab. What made him think he won? But I did think that.
Well, in fairness, that's like kind of a win for him, right? To escape a Boston Crab, he was probably like, yes.
It's true, yeah.
But that was a really nice, I thought, Bulldog DDT by Sam Houston at the end. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really. Like, I was like, oh, something good happened, and I guess it was enough for me to give it a star. I think kind of like you guys said, it was not too long. Didn't quite wear itself out. You know, for the first match, I felt like they did enough. And I had heat with Davis, which is what he's there to do, I guess. He really pissed me off, apparently, in 1987. Because the other night when I was watching this in my kitchen over a bowl of Lucky Charms, I was still pissed off.
Now I'm just pissed. I got to watch him still because I am like he has really not brought anything. I think since Beefcake cracked him with that knee, whatever that was, I think that has officially just like taken any ounce of ability he had left in his body. I think Beefcake.
Well, he's just got nothing in the ring. I mean, he's just got nothing except for like a slappable face. But right. We've seen it slap many times now, so it's like go away.
I mean, he's got to be done pretty soon. I think we're at the final days. I don't know if we even see him again, honestly. I guess we can check quick, yeah. But this is probably close to the end for old Dan.
Well, they end up going back on his lifetime plus 10 years suspension, and he starts reffing again, right?
Yeah, which I think is probably still within 80. Yeah, he's a ref already by the end of 89. Yeah, it looks like October. Yeah, this is the last time we see him in action. Because he's definitely not at WrestleMania. And I don't think he's on any Saturday Night's Main Event. So I think he's pretty much done after this. So he does go back to being a referee. So I'm guessing they probably take him off TV for a bit. And then it's definitely a angle, right, where he gets reinstated. Like, he doesn't just show up quietly, right? Do they say that he...
I almost think they just slipped him back in. But I could be wrong. I don't remember clearly either way.
Yeah, well, looking now, he's a referee by October.
Right.
He's a referee by October.
It says Dangerous Danny Davis' persona was eventually phased out. In 1989, Davis was reinstated as a probationary referee. From this point on, his official style became objective. So they probably just kind of hand-waved it that they're going to give him another shot and let him be a referee again, I guess.
Yeah, Jack Tunney's a turd.
He probably just got paid off. No conviction. Into January, still wrestling. February. Let's check really quick.
Oh, it looks like right here on the – it says right here on April 26th at a Superstars taping in Omaha, it says Bad News Brown pinned Tom Stock with the Ghetto Blaster 158. Danny Davis made his return as a referee for the bout with Vince McMahon stating that Davis was placed on probation status after surrendering his contract to be a wrestler.
Okay, so that's aired on May 13th. So that's on. Yeah. So his last. So if you go back one too, on May 14th, Bret Hart and Dave Wagner recently reinstated Dan Davis was a referee for the bout. So that actually aired before that. On 4/22, Superstars Jesse Ventura announced that Dan Davis had been reinstated under probation, had to surrender his wrestling license. So his last match was March 22nd in St. Cloud.
Can't you guys hear Jack Tunney like? Danny Davis sucked so much as a wrestler, we decided to go back on our lifetime plus 10 years ban and give him another chance at reffing. It's for the best. Ignore that massive penalty I gave him only 2 years ago that I am now rescinding. Thank you.
And
I suck.
Sorry, he was awful and screwed all your favorites out of the titles. Yeah, he it looks like his last televised appearance would have been the April 16th show. Challenge, April 16th challenge, he lost to Blue Blazer. So pretty much like he wrestles there on TV, and then on the 4/22 Superstars, so the next weekend they announced. So he wrestles the Sunday, and then on the Saturday they said he's back. So there you go. All right, enough of Danny Davis. Next up is an interesting match because it would become a feud eventually, but for right now it's just kind of a rando, and that is Brutus the Barber Beefcake taking on Mr. Perfect. Perfect's in the ring. It still gets the Kurt Hennig treatment here. Even though with the Rumble, he was pretty much just Mr. Perfect, still getting the Kurt Hennig name when he comes out here. Brutus struts out to his brand new music. 89 into 90 is where we really start to get all the theme songs. So we have very few wrestlers from this point on. There's still some, but the majority get theme music. So Beefcake now, especially the faces, a lot of the faces have music over the next year. And Brutus Beefcake debuts his. Rod says this is Hennig's toughest test to date. Rod and Al also gush over Beefer's new tights. This is a nice elevation point for Hennig and a good potential feud for Beefcake. We get some physique comparisons before finally getting underway with a lockup. Beefcake cranks the side headlock, uses his bulk to plant Perfect with a shoulder block. Beefcake slams him hard. We reset with a test of strength, which Beefcake wins, but Perfect levels him with a knee to break it and take over. Perfect starts to batter the gut with hard strikes and goes to a seated chin lock. Beefcake stands up in the hold and drops down, snapping Perfect's face into the buckle to bust it. Perfect recovers first, but Beefcake battles right back. Perfect goes to the eyes to regain control and then goes back to the gut. Beefcake mounts a comeback and slugs Perfect to the floor. Back inside, he beats him from corner to corner, rattles him with an atomic drop, and the rally continues until Beefcake teases the sleeper. Ron Bass comes out at ringside with a hat on to hide his bald head. He takes Beefcake's barber bag. That brings Beefcake out, and they brawl until Perfect clobbers him from behind. Perfect rolls in and picks up the count-out win. Beefcake comes back in and beats on Perfect, nearly stripping him down in the process. I thought it was perfectly acceptable. Nothing really standing out, but the work was fine. The crowd was engaged. I thought the finish made enough sense because you're not going to have either guy really take a pin here. You're just starting to build momentum with Beefcake, and Perfect has this perfect streak going on. And Beefcake's really more over than ever here. My only issue was like the Ron Bass stuff is going to be done. I mean, he beat him definitively in a stip match on national television. Like, what more do we need? So I would have preferred something else here and just let the Bass stuff go, because I think he's also done pretty soon, too. So I didn't see the point in having him out here. But, Steve, I went 2.5 on this one. I enjoyed it fine enough.
Yeah, when I saw Kurt Hennig come to the ring, I couldn't help but think that in just over 2 years, he's going to have one of the best matches ever at MSG. Mm-hmm. But you guys will get there. You guys will get there. Brutus has a really good wrestling book. I was thinking about that, too. But when he was out promoting it, he couldn't remember anything. So it made me think that the book is probably bullshit because he clearly remembers nothing. I don't know how he wrote a book and how I'm supposed to believe it. This is one point I was going to ask you guys this. When you watch these old shows and you see crowd shots and, like, they'll pan around the crowd and they'll be, like, these four or five. Like, I'd say there's this, like, group and they're, like, in their – you think like maybe 50s or 60s. Do you ever wonder if they're still alive, or is that just really weird of me?
No, I've like definitely had that
math, and I'm like, eh, they might be in their 80s.
Yeah, I've definitely had that thought process with guys like that before. People in the crowd that are older watching these shows. Yeah, I mean, was it four of them? There's probably 50-50. Like, you know, two are probably dead and two are alive. Would be my guess. Yeah, if you had to break down by the odds.
Yeah, that one got cancer. That one's still alive. Yeah, you know, yeah. And died unexpectedly a few months later. Right. So that was kind of weird, but it just whatever. Kurt Hennig takes the best freaking turnbuckle bumps. Mm-hmm. Anytime he goes into the corner, I pop for it. He's awesome. Zero heat for Ron Bass when he ran in. I thought it was Garth Brooks at first. He looked like Garth Brooks in his baseball cap, which was just like...
You think he was looking for Central Park to go sing? Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, like, there was no heat because you couldn't even tell, like, who could tell that was him?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just looked like some, like I said, looked like Garth Brooks in a hat. I don't know.
Even if they did... Like, no, like, do they care at this point? Like, the last time Bass won a match. And, again, he just got beat clean on national TV and shaved bald. Like, go away, you know?
Yeah, I wrote after that. I would just like to see Kurt bump a little bit more and, like, just wish Ron Bass didn't show up. But I thought Hennig was great, and I thought this was really good Beefcake. Like, I thought he was pretty mm-hmm. decent for some of the lows he's had. I thought this was – maybe this is an example of Kurt – getting the best out of someone. So I give it 2.5 as well.
Yeah, Bass, it looks like he's around to mid-March. He just kind of works a circuit against various guys. Nothing really Beefcake related, but he's on prime time a couple more times and then just house shows. So he, for all intents and purposes, he's pretty much cooked.
He's got friends in low places.
For sure. That's why he's still hanging out here at MSG. All right, Scott, what'd you think of this one?
Well, your match time, 9:29. We were talking before about Alfred and Ron just not being all with it. And for some reason, when Beefcake came in the ring, Alfred was like totally impressed with his upper body. He's like, look at those rippling muscles through his robe. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, Alfred, you put down the Crown Royal. he gets very effervescent when it comes to certain men with great physiques. But in any event, I like this match. I gave it 2 stars. You know, we talk about how going now into this stretch where in history where we're watching more guys than just pay-per-views, and there's some guys we've been impressed with, and other guys like you've said, JR, in the past, mm-hmm. like Rick Rude, who are not as good in the beginning as it seemed like they were. And I got to say something. I think depending on the opponent, I think Beefcake has really grown up faster than we thought he did.
Yeah,
as an in-ring worker. And, I mean, yes, I know, and I get Steve's point when he talks about, you know, guys carrying him and stuff. I mean, it is Kurt Hennig we're talking about. I get that. But still, though, it takes two to tango in 90% of matches. Yes, there are some literally great guys ever, like Flair and Steamboat, who can literally carry a napkin. But most 90% of matches, it takes two to tango. And even if you have a great guy like Kurt Hennig, you got to at least bring something to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And Beefcake, I think, was really good in this match. I think he's coming to his own. over the last year.
I agree.
You know, and this match was really good. I thought they went back and forth. They had some good. They had some good chemistry. I mean, he was able to sell stuff well with Hennig, and I think Kurt's just starting to get into the perfect phase. We'll see it full blown in a couple months, but he still is just a really great, great wrestler. Before we get into the gimmick itself, we don't have the theme or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to mention this later on too, when it works in reverse, but I know we said nationally, from a national perspective, that the Beefcake, that Ron Bass feud was for the most part over, but obviously they've needed it to, like, you know, glue together some house show stuff. So I get,
yeah, but I don't
Ron
think they
Bass
even
out at the end.
Yeah, actually, I'm looking at it. I guess they do go another 2 weeks or so against each other, but it's not much more, honestly. He's like Bass is on to the Blazer, Martel, and like that's it pretty much. So I think he's got like three more matches with Beefcake around the horn, and that's it.
Yeah. But I mean, so they obviously must have just needed to like glue together some regional stuff just to keep matches sensible.
Yeah. I'll tell you what it is. I think they wanted neither guy to lose, and this was the easiest way to have a guy come out and interfere. I think that's all it was. Bass was booked. They figured, well, we want to protect both guys, so come out there mad and beat him up.
Yeah. So there you go. So good match. Keep Perfect undefeated and keep Beefcake strong. And then obviously Ron Bass comes out later and, you know, Tuka played that game. So. For a good little 9.5 minute match, a lot of the matches, not a lot of short matches tonight. A lot of guys had to bring their working boots and did. And, yeah, no, not bad. Not bad at all. 2 stars for me. I wanted to go a little higher. Didn't quite reach that level, but 2 stars for MSG with two guys like this is perfectly acceptable. So I was happy with it. Worked good for me.
All right.
So next, speaking of guys still working, Jesus Christ.
God. Fucking match. All right, up next is a nightmare fuel match as Tim Horner takes on Jose Estrada. Al calls Horner an exciting young man. Rod says he's electrifying. Have we seen Horner yet, by the way? Is this? I feel like we're talking about him, right?
Yeah, let me double check. I think we talked about him in...
Yeah, December. He fought Horowitz. Okay, so we get
yeah, he did.
Info.
Yeah.
All right, so fuck him. Estrada mugs for the camera as we get started. Horner's Cabbage Patch Kid hair is this brutal. Al calls Estrada the Rock of Puerto Rico, if they have rocks out there. The fuck that meant. They trade some basic holds early to get things warmed up. Al thinks Horner's a good prospect for a title shot. I don't know what title he's talking about. Estrada takes over some strikes, but Horner gets a crossbody off the middle for two, takes a flying head scissors into a scissor hold. The crowd has already turned on this thing as Horner keeps cranking the headlock. Estrada takes over and keeps cutting off the same comeback attempts while awkwardly grabbing holds. Horner tries to charge but slams into the post, and Estrada goes to the shoulder as the crowd is just shitting all over this. Horner slugs his way back into control and starts picking up sluggish near falls as he just looks completely gassed. Horner gets a roll up into the bridge and the wind to mercifully end this. This was not pretty. Tons of choppiness. Horner had no wind, and the crowd hated it. I went half a star. God bless Jose for trying, but this was not good, and Horner is really not showing much here at all so far for us, Scott.
Yeah, I gave it a half star as well. I honestly didn't think we'd ever see Jose Estrada again, much less in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
Your match time, 8:15, which is probably 7:30 too long. I mean, obviously, for those that watch the old stuff on the network, like myself, who watched the every single episode of All Star Wrestling on the network, he was a bastion of those shows from, you know, 79 to 82.
And I look quick to see if this was like a sub or anything. Graham doesn't have it listed as a sub. I didn't know if he was just like working the back or something, and you know, someone didn't show or whatever. But maybe they just wanted a guy for Horner to go over with ease. But whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. He literally was number. He was literally like number two behind Johnny Rods as like the big jobber on All Star Wrestling from, you know, 79 to 82. And based on what I see, JR, I mean, it looks like he's around.
Well, you know what? He is one of the. He was one of the conquistadors. So,
yeah, he's dose. I have a joke about it.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, sorry. Big shock.
Anyway, him and Jose Luis Rivera. So,
what's funny is they're wrestling. I mean, they wrestle through like March. I mean, we see this is Tim Horner pinned Jose Estrada. This is March in San Diego.
Right.
I mean, this is fucking the Drizzlers.
No, yeah, he's around
again in Salt Lake City. Ironically, maybe they wrestle at the Salt Palace. Maybe they're the preliminaries before Destiny and Chiffon start passing out ham. I don't know, but
yeah. No, it says here he worked as just the Conquistador as well in '89. So no, and then they both leave. So Yeah, no, he's around for a bunch of 89 here. I forget he was one of the conquistadors, so yeah, he's been around pretty consistently.
It seems like he literally just wrestled fucking Tim Horner, because he wrestles him again. The final time they wrestle is March 25th at in San Antonio. And literally every match is fucking Tim Horner. So,
and he was one of the shadows too. So he's been around for a while, actually. In 87, yeah. He was around. And then when Randy Colley left, it was the other shadow. He stayed and became the Conquistador. So he's been pretty consistent on TV, just not as himself. So
he teams with Danny Davis at a challenge taping.
Oh God.
He wrestles Tito sometimes. Yeah, he's still around, I guess. But I mean, this match is just, this just isn't good. I mean, he's in decent shape. I mean, honestly, if you watch an episode of All-Star Wrestling from, like, 1981 and then this, you're like, wow, he really hasn't changed much. He was bald then, too. So at least he kept in shape. And obviously wrestling a lot as Conquistador, obviously. He wasn't still in wrestling shape. But really, Estrada has – there's no reason for him whether to be good or not. He's just there to be serviceable. But Tim Horner is just fucking horrendous. Just go back to being a fucking NWA jobber, because that's really what you're best at. I mean, this is just terrible. I don't know what the focus is on this. If he's just looking for, you know, WWF style, you know, loop money. I don't know what it is, but he's fucking horrible, Steve. Absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is just a filler. 8:15 your match time. And this is like the worst of the fill, you know.
Tim Horner, he just looks generic. Like, he just looks just like nothing. Like, just, he's kind of like, he should be the guy that's at the very end of the bench of like a college basketball team. And then maybe if they're losing by 70 in the first round of the NCAA tournament, the coach will let him play the last 10 seconds.
Even his nickname,
it just looks...
even his nickname goes with it. Oh, they're putting White Lightning in for the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, oh, White Lightning. Oh, and his green tights and his dumb boots. Oh, I hated him.
Yeah.
And there's loud, boring chants that fans hated him. MSG just did not like this. I was daydreaming about who the lousier dose was, Estrada or that Green Day record. But I didn't think it was a bad finish, I guess. And it ended just in time for it to not go to dud, so I gave it half a star as well. But I hated it.
Yeah, Horner stays around for a while, too, because when I started really watching in 90, like, I remember going to a house show when he was there, so I think he's around for a bit as well. So White Lightning is not going anywhere, sadly. We're going to have to continue to watch
terrible.
His bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's roll on. Next up, we have a interesting match here. It's Brett the Hitman Hart takes on the Honky Tonk Man. Honky continues sliding on down the card. He's also out in his new swank jumpsuit, the Royal Blue, with the Elvis on the back, or him on the back, I guess, whatever you want to say. Mm. That's kind of the infamous one that he'd be known for. That's the one I remember, and he wears it really from here until he leaves. This figure had it, the Hasbro figure, so this is kind of the look. Alan Roddick gushing over the jumpsuit. Hitman gets a big pop as he chugs out for the bout against his old stablemate. It looks pretty locked in. Honky bails to start as Hart paces around. Al mentions Honky busting a guitar on Hart's head recently and notes that he has no guitar tonight. Rod thinks he's low on cash due to all the ones he's destroyed. That's a salient point. Jimmy riles up the crowd on the mic as we get lots of stalling. Honky finally gets in and takes a beating from the Hitman, who's rolling with the hard strikes. Hart's really on point, full of fire here, but Honky lands a shot to the gut and suddenly is in control. Honky works a simple punch and kick offense, but Hart dodges a fist drop and heats right back up. Honky quickly cuts him off by leveraging him hard to the floor. Hart tries to climb in, but Jimmy nails him with a megaphone, which allows Honky to start targeting the back. Jimmy keeps landing some shots and chokes where he can as Honky methodically batters the back and grabs near falls. Al says Hart's mistake here is letting Honky set the pace. Honky gets a, which is none. Honky gets the seated chin lock and kicks Hart in the back when he fights up. Hart catches Honky with a punch as he comes off the middle rope and unloads some crisp offense. Jimmy hooks Hitman's leg and Brett goes out and stalks after, but Honky catches him from behind. They brawl out there until both are counted out. Brett beats up Honky after Jimmy escapes, and I thought it was a pretty blah finish to what was building to a perfectly fine match. I think Hart should have just gone over here. Like, I don't know why we're protecting Honky, and I know that they're going to have issue going forward, but still, who cares? Jimmy is awesome. I really thought he was good, and the crowd is super into it because of him. Basic match across the board. Honky's offense is so bland, and it's never really going to elevate beyond just being a solid match unless they are, you know, able to kind of build to a hotter finish. He just seems to be unable to recapture the magic he had with Steamboat and with Savage in 87. I went 2.5 here. I thought Brett was really sharp, and I like Jimmy Hart at ringside, Steve.
Well, I talked about needing to get over it, and the Honky Tonk Man still makes me sweat to this day because I don't know if you guys know this, but I was a huge, huge, huge Ricky Steamboat fan as a child. And my all-time favorite match is Steamboat versus Savage WrestleMania 3. And, like, that feud was the perfect time for me as a wrestling fan. Like, I thought Ricky Steamboat's larynx was crushed. You know, I literally believed it and lived that feud. And the matches were coming in June and to Buffalo, and my parents bought me tickets. And I just remember when the Honky Tonk Man's music playing, me telling my dad, "Oh, Dad, this guy sucks. Steamboat's got this. Steamboat's going to keep the belt, no problem." And then, of course, right in front of me, they stole the title, and I cried, literally bawled on my dad's lap for 45 minutes. The only thing that stopped me was he took me for nachos and one of those foam Hulk Rules foam fingers. And he's like, "Don't worry, you know, Hulk's going to be out." And then Fuji had some guy who spit green shit in his face, and I cried again. And I told my dad to watch the news to make sure Hulk's eyesight was okay.
It was a traumatic night for you.
Brutal. It was a brutal night at the matches. Steamboat loses the belt, and Hogan gets green shit spit in his face. But my daughter, Paula, is actually currently obsessed with the 87 Saturday Night's Main, October 87, the Honky Tonk Macho Match. See, because she watches wrestling like a Disney movie. You know, kids, like, they'll have their Frozen period, so they'll watch Frozen for, like, 6 months, and then they'll get sick of it, and then they'll watch Toy Story. Well, she watches wrestling like that. So, like, she wants to watch the October 87 Saturday Night's Main Event every day right now. And it starts with the Honky Tonk and Macho Man. And she likes him, and it crushes me. And she likes the Colonel, too. Brett looks great in this one, though. And he was over more than I expected for 89. The crowd was really into him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, like, Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart had everyone so pissed off. I thought it was awesome. Like, Honky Tonk Man, I agree with you guys, is cooked and is struggling compared to how he was, like, in 87. I love Peter's joke, was it last week or the week before, about him having that off year of his career, 87, being better than everything else. But I thought he was really good here tonight. Jimmy Hart is just relentless with the megaphone and with the heel antics. He's so good, I thought. I was also disappointed in the finish, though. I almost would have rather just seen him screw Brett altogether.
Right.
But I gave each guy a star, so I gave it 3 stars. I liked it a little bit more than you. I thought each guy earned a star, and I did enjoy it, but I was a little disappointed in the finish. But, man, wow, the people, there's like 20 or 30 people in the front 4 or 5 rows at MSG that looked like they were going to kill Honky and Jimmy Hart, and they were really revving it up, and I thought really good heel work by those two guys. So, you know, one last maybe hurrah for the Honky Tonk Man, that jerk. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'll give you, like I said, each guy earned a star, so I'll give it 3.
Wow, I didn't know you were at the show in Buffalo. I didn't realize that show was in Buffalo when Honky beat Steamboat. Wow.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm looking at this card, Steven. Forget Savage Steamboat or Savage Honky and the fucking Killer Khan. You know who you got to see live that night? You don't even realize who you got to see live that night. Silvano Souza. That's who you got to see live that night. That's the greatest moment of your live wrestling life.
Silvano Souza. I was probably crying in the hallway. I might have been crying in the hallway in the midst of my dad's eternal search for nachos and a foam finger.
I thought you were going to say Steve Blackman, but that was actually 1989, not 1987, that he pops up.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to be one of the wrestling fans who've seen his two favorite heroes lose their belts, because I saw Honky Tonk Man beat Steamboat, and then I saw Hogan at WrestleMania 6 lose to the Warrior, which sucked as well. So,
wow.
Yep, wow. Those are my kind of – well, I've been to 3 famous shows, I guess. Those two and Dudley Game. So I saw The Rock.
It's a solid 3. Yeah.
Yeah,
it is solid 3, yeah. There you go. All right. So there we go. Yeah, I gave this match your match time 12:04.
Mm-hmm.
So good length. I gave it 2 stars. I thought it was good. Clearly, of course, I shouldn't say that. I feel like it's easy to jump. I'm going to change my mind on that, because I feel like it's easy for us to jump on the, oh, here's the Brett experiment thing. But, I mean, they used to break Brett and Anvil up for singles matches at house shows anyway. So I'm not going to totally jump on that bandwagon yet that this was, you know, the Brett singles experiment. No, it wasn't. It was, you know, Anvil was wrestling singles somewhere else and Brett's wrestling singles here. So it wasn't like the biggest thing on the planet. But obviously, a part of that is they sent Anvil to some backwoods nowhere house show and Brett gets to wrestle the guard, although Anvil does, you know, wrestle singles down the road here. Having said that, the match was fine. Honky's definitely fucking cooked. I know I feel like we like, you know, lauded him, JR, throughout most of 87 and a little bit of 88. Obviously, Savage helped in that. But to Conky's credit, he definitely was very into it when he was Intercontinental Champion. But obviously, he knows that he's, you know, he's fucking cooked now. Even though he gets, you know, he doesn't totally fall off the map because he'll be part of a huge debut coming up later mm-hmm. in the year. So he's not totally baked, but it's obvious that, you know, he realizes that he's just fodder now. He had his run and then he, you know, tried to hold Vince up and now he's the one that's lucky to have a job. So, you know, he's just trying to keep his head above water at this point. But, having said that, the match was fine. I thought the ending was kind of stupid. I don't understand why Brett couldn't win. What are we protecting about Honky here? Is he still, you know, does Vince still have something about him we have to deal with? I don't know, but Brett not winning clean was pretty stupid. Nothing to hurt Brett. Brett's in the tag team right now, so it's not the end of the world. But it wouldn't have hurt for him to win the match clean and, you know, make Honky start you know signing the checks. You know, but having said that, the match was fine. 2 stars and a good showcase for Brett. Jimmy's still a great manager. Some people feel that maybe he's kind of falling down the manager ladder, but he's still, of course, very useful and has great guys. So no complaint here. And Brett looked good. You know, Brett still has that tag-ish feel, so he's not the Brett we know yet, but he's obviously not chopped liver.
No, I mean, we'll see more good walking Brett hockey. The they're a pretty good match. So
yeah, exactly. So we'll see more good singles Brett once he starts doing more singles. Right now, he's just filling a spot on a house show. In a house show. So
all right,
but a good match and 2 stars for me.
All right. Well, speaking of good matches, our next one here's a hot one on paper, and that is the Rockers taking on the Brainbusters. This should be a treat. We saw them kind of get into scuffles at Survivor Series. If you remember, they ended up both getting DQ'd. Good heat on the Busters, who were without Bobby tonight, going at it. I was going to say solo, but I guess duo, whatever. Big pop for the Rockers as they charge out. Sean and Double A start off with some feeling out and then some antics by the Rockers to send both Busters reeling to the floor to regroup. Sean continues to fluster on with fast-paced offense that keeps them all off balance. Tully tags in, but it's more of the same, with the Rockers tagging in and out, working together to pick apart the arm. The Busters try to double team, but that all goes wrong. They get waxed by the Rockers, who fluster them more, hit double sidekicks to clear the ring to a pop. Al keeps mixing up the Rockers. He can't keep them straight. Michaels flies through a few shots to stay in control, hitting a nice head scissors takeover on Arn. The Busters try to ambush and again get cleared out to the floor. The crowd is just loving this, as Rod says, the Brainbusters need Bobby. Things finally turn when the Busters get cleared out yet again, but this time Sean chases after Tully and just gets leveled by Arn. Arn goes back to work inside, and the Busters start doing what they can do best, cut the ring in half and double-team to perfection. They wear down Sean, nabbing near falls, grinding away. Sean finds an opening and lands some shots and a sunset flip on Arn, but Tully breaks that up and keeps the Busters on top. Sean fights off Tully, gets a high cross body for two, but Arn comes back in with an abdominal stretch to slow him down. Sean breaks free, tries to tag, but Arn stops him and goes to a tight chin lock. Arn baits in Marty, allowing Tully to crack Sean with a forearm off the top for two. Sean again leaps and tries to tag Tully, but Tully tries to tag Marty. Tully catches him in midair to stop him. Arn comes in, hits a crisp spinebuster for two, which Rod calls a body-to-body suplex. Sean comes in, blocks a splash with his knees, makes the hot tag. Marty cleans house, and Sean leaps off his shoulders with a big fist to Tully. The brawling continues as Marty tries to suplex Tully. Arn trips him and yanks down on his tassels as Tully falls on top for the win. The Rockers clean house after. This was super fun, a crackling pace, and a red-hot crowd. These teams are tailor-made for each other, and we just need more of them. Nice win for the Busters. Great showing for the Rockers, especially Michaels, whose selling was on point. Sold like a champ. And I like I said, these two teams are great for each other because Marty and Sean sell so well. They move at such great pace. Arn and Tully work that, you know, controlled chaos and are such good precision during a heat segment. It just really meshes well. So I went 3.5 for this one. And you can feel that they have so much more potential for even more, Scott. But this is a real treat here on an MSG show.
Oh, there's no doubt. 4 stars for me. I mean, this is a historically great match that I've always loved. And they put on an equally great match. I don't know if it was before or after this at the Boston Garden. Which many feel is better than this match. So if you can find it, watch it because it's pretty damn good. I believe it's, let's see, I think it's after, but let me confirm. Flint, Topeka, Lowell, Springfield. That's weird. They went through Lowell, Springfield and didn't go to, maybe it was before, unless they wrestled in February. Oh, there's Providence. That's kind of odd. I know they wrestle a match somewhere in this neck of the woods at the Boston Garden. Here it is, February 11th. Oh, no, that's the face-to-faces. Oh, face-to-face special. Oh, okay, they put them on the face-to-face. Okay. Rude, Tito. Nope, it's not that card. I got to find where that match is. Anyway, fantastic match. Again, you're talking about four guys, two young guys, and then two, you know, fucking studs who clearly get it. They know their stuff, and just a great match all around. Here it is. Yep, January 13th. That was a that match was 15-11. Your time here, 16-14, and worth every minute. One thing, JR, that you said that I've always said about Arn and Tully, and I used to say this when they were in NWA too, controlled chaos. They are so good at laying out the psychology of a match where everything's just fucking all over the place, but in a good way. There's not many teams that are good at that, and I've said that for years about Arn and Tully. They know how to just like fuck shit up like crazy and do it well. And when you got a team like the Rockers who kind of like to improvise, it works even better. There's something about these two teams because of that, where you got Arn and Tully who kind of – they're the canvas, and they give you the paint, and Sean and Marty paint it. I mean, it's just the way – it's perfect. And they work so well together. They're both – all four of them are very athletic in different ways. It just – and the crowd loved it. You know, because the crowd doesn't get to see too many, you know, particularly at MSG in this era. And this is why the tag division in 89 was so damn good. Because, you know, admittedly, a tag – unless, like, you're the Hart Foundation or whatever. But even Anvil, you know, sometimes is not at that level. It's not often you get to see a pair of tag teams both just so expertly athletic and can really hustle back and forth. And there's no wasted motion and no – you know, catching your breath and no long rest holds and shit. And they just got the pedal to the metal. Not often from two WWF tag teams, maybe one in a match, but not two. Very rare. Just so exceptional and really crackling for the card. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to happen to watch fucking Jose Estrada and some of the, you know, fucking honky. This is just top notch, Steve. Two exemplary teams just hitting the pedal to the metal and showing everyone that the WWF is finally, after a couple years of kind of fleshing things out, have put together an incredible tag division.
I loved it. Amazing pace. Great tempo. I also liked how they avoided kind of the paint-by-numbers match where they would do, like, for example, in the beginning of the match, it was the Rockers who were working the thing where they would the Brainbusters would try to tag, but then the Rockers would drag them into the corner and the ref would miss the tag. Mm-hmm. And usually it's the faces who are doing that, but this time it was the heel, so I thought they kind of mixed up the roles really well in it, and it just added to the fun of the match, I thought. There was a great arm drag by HBK. It wasn't Steamboat great, but it was great. And then he did a high cross body. I lost Steamboat off the top rope, too. So I thought that was kind of interesting, seeing HBK mix in some of Steamboat's offense. The signature spine buster by Arn, which Ron screwed up, was awesome. Great heel finish. I loved how he pulled his foot out and then held him down by the tassels. I thought that was brilliant. Just a tag team clinic, and I gave it 4 stars. I loved it.
And this is a match that was nominated in our GWWE greatest televised matches of all time list. And I put it on my scorecard today, and 4 stars for me. And this match could, at the moment, could be in my top 50. Could be in my top 50, depending on what other matches I like in this realm. But, I mean, I tell you, expert. And if you can find that, if anybody can find that January 13th MSG house show or Boston Garden house show, find it. Watch it. It's somewhere. It's got, I think it's on, is it on Sean's DVD?
This one is.
Or might be on the tag division. This one's on Sean's DVD. That other match is on another one, though.
Well, Graham would have it. He doesn't have it, so.
Yeah, he doesn't have it. I guess it's not then. I could have sworn it was on January 13th. Yeah, I thought it was on maybe the tag DVD or, no, I guess not. Anyway, if you can find it, it's January 13th, Anesson. Actually, Trongard does those matches too. That's kind of odd. I didn't realize he would travel there. Mm-hmm. Trongard, Superstar Billy Graham, and Lord Alfred.
Graham is still around, huh? Yeah, I guess he's around for a little bit.
But anyway, those two matches, this one and the one in Boston, are going to be two of the greatest tag team house show matches you'll ever see in your life. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
So, were you guys a little surprised with the Rockers ranking in the tag team thing? I thought they were going to be maybe 3-4 spots higher. I just thought with the age of most people in the group and
yeah,
I don't know, I was a little surprised by them. I thought they went in a little bit.
Well, I'll say this. I I initially thought like they were potentially my number one. And Aaron talked me out of it. Like, as we talked through our lists on No Holds Barred, they ended up actually moving down, I think, our combined lists around to not far from where they actually ended up. I think they should have been. I was happy to see the Hardys one. I would say that was my number one. I thought they'd be more in the maybe 4 to 7 range, like ahead of Edge and Christian Dudley's grouping. And I thought they would have been ahead of the Bulldogs. That was the one that actually surprised me. I figured they'd be behind Demolition and the Hearts, but I thought they'd be ahead of the Bulldogs. And Usos, New Day were a little bit lower than I thought. So.
I had the Rockers much higher than 8. I won't reveal it because they will be revealed on future episodes in the main event. But I had the Rockers higher than where they were where they were in the final list.
Yeah, I was surprised. I think we had them not far from where they ended up in the end. They were one of my, you know, handfuls for number one originally. But then, like I said, as Aaron and I kind of talked through our list week by week. And then toward the end, we started really reshuffling. It just kind of, they ended up where they ended up. Yeah, we had them at 9, actually. So Aaron and I actually had them lower than they even finished. Hardy.
Well, Aaron also has The Sopranos at like number 55 on his TV list. So.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I mean, if this was my own, I probably would have had them a little higher. You know what shuffled everything around was when the Shield rule got them as a group. They shot up our list. And that kind of bumped stuff down, and then Revival moved up our list. So, there you go. All right, why don't we take a break?
Yes, let's take a break. JR, good show so far. What do you think?
Yeah, well, yeah. Now after this one, before that, it was fine. It was kind of a real barbell show in a way. You know, it was like we've had some crap, but we've also had some really good stuff. Normally, I feel like on these shows at this point, we've just kind of been living in the middle. Right. But now we're kind of end on each end.
Yeah. Steve, what do you think so far?
I really enjoyed the last two matches. The only one I like hated was that generic Tim Horner match, and I liked watching Kurt, and the first one was I really liked the last two matches. I really liked.
Okay. So. Well, why don't we take a break? When we come back, we will have, let's see, that was 5 matches. I believe we have, 4 more? 1, 2, 3. Yep, 4 more matches, including our hot main event, which has been a really hot feud raging throughout the last few months. But first, a breather, because... Allow me as high as that ivory tower. It's your limit. Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away. I'll be okay. Promotional consideration paid for by the following. Place Free Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceFreeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on 2 great feeds. On the Place Free Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB in Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show,
as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Headbanger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where, what the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast, so you better not miss it, because I'm on it.
Nation, we'd be back taking a look at the January 89 Madison Square Garden house show. Steve Bennett, Scott Crispillo, and myself doing that for you. And one of our matches earlier was an interesting one as we start to see kind of the climb of Bret Hart as a singles act taking on the, as you've heard earlier tonight, heated, hated honky-tonk man. And we saw two hearts out there ringside as Bret Hart, Jimmy Hart. They really get the crowd whipped up. Speaking of them two hearts, that is our number one song in the nation here tonight. This week in 1989, here playing Beneath Us by Phil Collins, and that delivers us Scott Criscolo in the Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR, and yes, Two Hearts by Phil Collins, still cranking out hot singles cuts throughout the late 80s. I'm pretty sure at this point Genesis was on a break after the great albums they had in the mid-80s. So Phil Collins, of course, on a roll, and Two Hearts is your number one song. Steve Bennett, big fan of the song?
Yeah, well, so when my daughter was born, like, I knew I was not going to be one of these guys who'd be able to, like, not sleep. So my wife and I decided to kind of split up. So, like, I didn't really see her for the first 6 weeks. She would stay up with the baby, like, almost the first half, and I'd stay up the second half. So me and my daughter, we'd be up together in the middle of the night. She'd wake up, you know, 3 o'clock. I'd have to feed her or whatever. And one night, I was just trolling through stuff, and I was watching SummerSlam. And I saw the Bret Hart promo where he talks about, just like Phil Collins says, we're two hearts beating as one. And I didn't know, like, I couldn't place the songs. And I searched it, and then I listened to it, and I'm holding my newborn daughter in my arms. And, like, ever since then, I've been, like, that's our song, like, Daddy and Paula's Two Hearts song. Anytime she wears something with a heart on it, she'll come to me and show me, look, Daddy, two hearts, two hearts. So, yes, it's pretty cool that the first show I'm on, that's the number one song in the country.
Oh, so, yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Daddy daughter story.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Phil Collins always is good at those kind of songs. So, and it is your number one song this week. Number two, Don't Rush Me by Taylor Dane. Number three, Armageddon It by Def Leppard as they continue to ride the hysteria train as that album's over a year old at this point. The number one we had last week on Rumble Weekend, My Prerogative by Bobby Brown, down to number four. When I'm With You by Sheriff. I remember that piece of shit, Steve Bennett, at number five. Every Rose Has Its Thorn by Poison, tremendous song. Down to number six, Smooth Criminal, not the Alien Ant Farm one, but the Michael Jackson original at number seven.
Good thing Peter Winston wasn't there. We'd have to hear about Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
Thorn. Well, if it's on the top 10 for the next Saturday's Main Event, I'm sure we will.
There we go.
The Way You Love Me by Karen White at number eight. When the Children Cry by White Lion. Remember that one, Steve?
Roar.
Yeah, didn't that win the 80s tournament? Was that the winner? The 80s song tournament?
Some Swedish guy probably thought so. number nine. And at number 10, Put a Little Love in Your Heart by Annie Lennox and Al Green. I remember that song, too. So there's your top 10 that came out 2 days before that Saturday, January 21st. 1989, and the number one song in the Bennett house and in our hearts, Two Hearts by Phil Collins. No movies this weekend, JR.
Two Hearts.
Two Hearts. No movies this weekend. So you're off the hook for having to come up with Italian directors. There were three games in the NBA on this Monday night. None of the locals are in action.
Can I ask a question? I'm sorry, Scott. I dare mean to interrupt you during the Pop Culture Corner.
That's okay. That's quite all right. But better be a good question.
I've always wanted to ask you this. Why don't you read the top box office like you read the – like you miss out every year on so many great movies to talk about. Like why not read the top five this weekend in the box office? Like why do you – read all these jabroni movies that they view that make like $30 instead of...
Because jabroni movies are fun to make fun of. If I made fun of like Gandhi, we'd get fucking slammed by like, you know, serious bohemian assholes. But if we make fun of like shit movies where JR and I can't pronounce the fucking Spanish directors, it adds to the excitement and the fun.
Well, Scott, maybe you should start mentioning... Well, maybe you should start mentioning maybe like once a month what the top movies of the month were.
It could be something interesting. Maybe you just want me to add more Police Academy so JR could wax nostalgic about his guy sure. Steve Guttenberg or Matt.
Well, and I did. You guys suckered me into watching the most random movie one night. It was like it was the comedy duo. It was I can't think of you know what the movie was. I just remember tweeting about like that I watched it and Justin like. Tweeting back that I took the most random movie like recommendation of all time. What the hell was I thinking? But the movie was good. It was a funny movie. I don't remember what it was.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to do then. You asked for this, and I was going to do a nice brisk pop culture corner for JR, but since you opened your fucking mouth, this is what I'm going to do. Here's the top 10 sorry, grossing Jeff. Films.
I didn't mean tonight.
Well, no. It's too late now. No, he had to open his fucking mouth. So, all right, this will be quick. Here were the top 10 films for 1988, since we are only in January. If you're asking me like July, Steve, then forget it. But we are only in January. So here were the top 10 grossing films of 1988, since we just finished 88. At number 10, Working Girl, $102.9 million. Number 9, Die Hard, $141.2 million. I thought it would have been higher than 9. Number 8, Big, $151.7 million. Number 7, Cocktail, kind of like where JR is sitting in his kitchen right now.
Ellie with an eye. Ellie with an eye, two times Daniel's son with Tom Cruise in that movie.
That's right.
Not happy with that, yeah, bitch.
Number 6, Rambo 3, $189 million. Number 5, and it was on an episode of the Goldbergs last week, Twins, $216.6 million. That seems like a JR movie, Twins. Number 4, Crocodile Dundee 2, $239.6 million. At number 3, one of the greatest of all time, and actually a sequel is coming out soon, Coming to America.
Oh, so good.
$288.7 million. At number 2, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? $329.8 million. And the number 1 grossing film of 1988, and this is you, Steve Bennett, when it comes to Pearl Jam songs.
Rain Man.
And concert dates, Rain Man. $354.8 million. So there's your top 10 box office movies that came out.
A lot of bangers in there.
Definitely a lot of bangers in there. Yes.
Yeah. Indeed. Coming to America for sure. Oof.
Yes. So there you go. All right. So I will do that at the. I'll try and find it monthly, but at worst, I will do it when we end years in 1989. So. All right.
So 3 years from now, NBA. We'll find out that 1989 list. Speaking of Crocodile Dundee, my daughter must have heard in a movie or something, so she keeps saying "Good day, mate" over and over, and makes me miss Stacy. So I can't wait to see her in New York. That's my side. That's my father-daughter story right there.
Yeah.
Do you follow up with "That's not a knife"? This is a knife. Isn't that in that movie?
This is a knife.
He said, "Don't get stung by a stingray."
This is a knife. Yeah.
Anyway, in the NBA on that night, only three games in action. The high scorer on that evening, one of Mr. D'Amato's guys, St. John's alum Chris Mullin, scored 27 for Golden State in a loss to Cleveland. Not much otherwise. The standings quickly. In the NBA at this time. In the Atlantic, the Knicks led the Atlantic at 26-14. Cavs led the Central 30-7. Jazz led the Midwest, who played at the Salt Palace, at 23-15. And the Lakers led the Pacific at 27-12. In hockey on this evening in the NHL, there were, there were four games on tap. No, Mr. Bennett, your Sabres were not playing at the Odd or anywhere else on this evening. Mr. D'Amato's Rangers beat the Oilers 3-2. Two of JR's and my favorite teams, the Hartford Whalers and the Quebec Nordiques, played up at Le Colisée, and the Whalers with a 5-0 shutout victory.
Yeah, Red Wings were leading. Right there.
There you go. Red Wings leading the Norris with 52 points. Calgary led the Smythe with 69. Montreal led the Adams with 72. The Sabres were in second with a mere 48 points. So, yeah, Montreal was dominating the division that year. And the Rangers were leading the Patrick by 5 points. And a death on this date in 1989. Oh, no. A legendary artist of the 20th century. He was 84 years old. He died in Figueres, California. On this date, January 23rd, 1989, Salvador Dali passed away on this date. A skilled draftsman best known for the striking and bizarre images in his surrealist work, his painterly skills are often attributed to the influence of Renaissance masters. His best-known work, The Persistence of Memory, was completed in August of 1931. His expansive artistic repertoire included film, script, sculpture, and photography, at times in collaboration with a range of artists in a variety of media. So Salvador Dali, one of the greatest artists of the 20th century, passed away on this date, January 23rd, 1989, at the age of 84.
And that is your... that mailed his ear? Was that the guy who mailed his ear?
No, that was Van Gogh.
Oh, Van Gogh, of course. Okay. Of course.
And that is your pop culture.
Justin, you dodged a bullet that there's no football because I would have smoked you in that game.
Yeah, I'm done.
I'm trying to
football.
Make this fucking short, JR. This is not my fault. Christ's sakes.
I'm just happy that Kelly Nelson's team had 69 points. So good for him. speaking of Sal's that passed away, I guess we should mention our buddy Salvatore Bellomo.
Yes.
Passed away earlier this week, last week, I guess last week, right?
Last week, yeah.
Yeah.
Last week.
So sad, February 9th, he passed away. Of course, he was. We saw him. Have we seen him on the show actually at all? I don't know if we ever talked.
I don't think he's been on a house show probably since '85.
Was he in? What didn't they do the Piper's Pit in the Garden with him? Was that at the Garden? Was that when you?
Yes, where Piper called him the man. Yeah.
Was that before us though? Yeah. I think that was pre '85.
Before WrestleMania, he was in place of the JYD. I could have sworn that was one of ours. Maybe not.
He fought Morocco in February of 85 and Roma in February of 87. So those are the only two times we've talked about him here. But of course, you know, infamous for his ECW shit as well. In 93, wrestling the first ever ECW title match, lost to Jimmy Snuka. Wrestled into 94. Actually, and he had some interesting stuff going on there. He was active in the business right up until his death. Was a trainer for the Belgian Wrestling School, located in Belgium. So, good for him.
And tremendous TNT guy.
He has been on since.
Has
he been on since Pedro died?
Oh no, that's right. We have not either. We can talk about that too if you want to take a moment.
Yes, Pedro Morales passed away as well. Yeah. We kind of gave Pedro the shaft though, because his last few matches were really not that great. Actually, kind of sad, but I mean, look, first Triple Crown champion ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, WWF title, Intercontinental title, Tag title, and a lot of people. I'll say this very quickly, JR. And then, if you guys want to comment quick before we move on, a lot of people feel like Pedro doesn't get the respect, like he's not in that rarefied air like a Bruno, you know, in terms of WWF. And the reason is, well, I'll tell you why. The reason is he kept wrestling. Like Bruno was done. Mm-hmm. Bruno was like never wrestling anymore. He was, you know, he put on the banana yellow suit, was on Superstars Challenge, and you never saw him wrestle again except for those rare matches like the cage with, you know, with Savage and Adonis in '86 with Tito, and very rare special matches. He didn't even wrestle at the first WrestleMania. You know what I mean? But when Pedro just ended up being like a glorified jobber, I feel like he kind of lost his, a little bit of the shine of his luster.
But you know? I think from a business perspective, did he actually do more than Bruno? Because he kind of gave back, he put guys over, he laid down for a bunch of guys. So you could almost look at it the opposite way, right? Bruno kind of went out on the top, which is cool for him. But on the flip side, you could argue that Pedro stuck around and put guys over and kind of did the job and whatever. So I thought it's an interesting way to look at it both ways. I think Pedro maybe doesn't get that level of respect. I wouldn't say level of respect. Bruno's just Bruno. I do think Pedro is remembered fondly. For a while, too, WWE really pushed him as like a true legend. You don't hear much about him anymore, but in the 90s, like I feel like they would talk about him a lot, and maybe that's because Bruno was on the outs, and Pedro was kind of the guy they'd hype up, and he was in one of the original – was he in one of the early Hall of Fames, or did he go in later?
Pedro went in like 90.
Yeah, he was early.
94, 95. He was one of those early classes, yeah.
Yeah, so he was in pretty early. So he was obviously way ahead of Bruno, but Bruno had other issues. So I think I feel like Pedro, pre-Bruno's kind of comeback, was painted as the stalwart of that era by, you know, him and Backlund were kind of the guys that were looked at fondly. And I think by fans, too. Like, you hear a lot of fans talk about Pedro, like Cowboy Sr. being piped up. I don't know if you saw his note here.
Yep.
Said, R.I.P. Pedro. I saw Pedro wrestle in person a number of times as a kid, one of the Elsine greats. I saw him defeat Pampero Firpo at a title match at the Boston Garden when I was 14. It was a packed house, and they love Pedro. So I think if you talk to fans, especially in the Northeast, they remember Pedro fondly as the guy who really kind of rallied the Puerto Rican fans and filled in for that ethnic superhero with Bruno kind of stepping back for a few years there. So, I mean, maybe he's not the guy that first pops in your head, but I think he's a guy that definitely gets a lot of respect. And I don't remember where he finished on the all-time.
Somewhere in the 40s, single. I think. I was just thinking that myself. Somewhere in the 40s. I had him in the 50s, I think, on my list. Somewhere 40s or 50s, I think, Pedro finished.
Yeah, I can try and take a look.
Which means now, with Pedro's passing, the oldest living former WWF champions, Superstar Billy Graham and the Iron Sheik, are both 75. And Bob Backlund's actually 69. I didn't think he was that old. And Hogan is 65. So there's your four oldest living.
It's pretty
WWF
crazy.
Course.
How old's Vince? Isn't Vince on that list?
Vince is 70. You know what? I just forgot. Vince is 70. So he's 1 year. Wow, Vince is older than fucking, well, he's only 1 year older than Backlund. Isn't that nuts? Yeah, so he's 70. All right, so yeah, you count 70. So you got 70. Yeah, but the two oldest tied, Superstar Billy Graham and the Iron Sheik, are 75. So they're the two oldest living world champions.
I can't believe Billy Graham's still living. Anything you want to talk about Pedro, Steve, before we move on?
No, I mean, you guys didn't say it at all. He's a legend. I mean, he's a legend. Hall of Famer, one of the greats. So rest in peace to both of those guys.
All right. Yeah, I'll try and find out where he finished. I think you're right. He's probably in the 40 to 50 range. Just checking now. Actually, no, he's not even in that range. I think it might be a little bit lower. Let me check this last one before we move on. Here he is. He finished 67th, so kind of low. He had a high vote of 9.
Yeah.
Low vote of 98. So he's on 72 ballots. I think there was, 110-ish in this one? So
108, something like that, yeah.
So there you go. All right. R.I.P. Pedro, R.I.P. Salvatore Bellomo. And that's that. Let's move on. Sean Mooney's in the back talking to Ted DiBiase and Virgil. Ted reiterates that he bought Hercules and says there's no reason for a rematch after Ted humiliated him at MSG already. He says Sean can take a win to the bank tonight. Virgil's banned from ringside, but Ted disagrees, says Virgil only answers to him and no other officials. But that said, the insinuation that he needs Virgil to win is absurd. Mooney's also with Hercules, who says DiBiase has a big problem tonight as Virgil won't be around and Ted has to put his money where his mouth is. Herc will claim his Declaration of Independence, his Emancipation Proclamation, and break the chains of bondage tonight. Things are getting raunchy. Mooney's then with Bossman and Slick. Big Bossman says he beat Hogan like a dog. Hulk has more heart than brains, and that just means a different kind of correction is needed. He will punish Hogan and beat him down. Slick doubles down and asks Hulk if he's man enough to answer this challenge. I thought this was a fantastic promo by Bossman and Slick. I thought it was really, really well done. I dug it. That brings us to our big match, a showdown that triggered from last month, an incident that happened between Hillbilly Jim and Ravishing Rick Rude. This hot crowd is all over Rude as he saunters out and taunts the crowd before disrobing. Jim charges out, goes right at Rude. They start brawling before the bell even rings. Rod calls Jim the protege of the Hulkster as Jim's all riled up, shooting Rude all over the ring, clamping on a bear hug, punishing the back. Rude goes to the eyes and starts to slug away before dumping Jim to the floor. Rude stomps away back in the ring, but Jim chokes him to slow him down. Rude yanks him hard to the corner, works the throat and the neck, picking up a near fall. Jim wakes up and starts to punch away, but misses a charge in the corner. Rude goes up top and lands a big fist for two after a lazy cover. Jim slugs his way back in again, hits an atomic drop, and mocks Rude's selling before hoisting him up and dropping him hard on his ass. Jim eats knees on a splash, and Rude snaps to Rude Awakening for the win. And I will say, gentlemen, I thought this was a pretty fun little match. I thought the crowd helped. Rude sold his ass off and was bouncing around, was on point on offense. And I thought the finish was good, too, as he was a step ahead the whole time. I enjoyed this one. And we'll put it in the non-shit-take-Rude column, Steve. I went 2.5. I thought he worked hard to carry Jim here, and he really sold and carried the match. So there you go, Steve. What did you think of this one?
My notes are almost the same as yours. I thought Rude sold his ass off. I thought the crowd was great. I thought the finish was really good. I thought it was the right length. I gave it 2.5 as well. I really enjoyed it. It just felt right. You know, it felt like they just kind of booked it right. Fit in the card in the right spot. You know, they came out at the right time. They stalled. Rude didn't stall too long. Bumped like a maniac. I enjoyed it. 2.5 for me as well.
All right. Before we do that, I was curious. We were on the topic of Pedro Morales in our top 100. You said JR finished at 67.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I had him at 57 on my top 100. And Steve Bennett, you – I'm looking at one of our old charts. You, my friend, did not have him at all.
Just an oversight then.
Yeah.
Yeah, if that's a bad job by me, I got to take that one on the chin. That was the one negative about that list, and I even admitted it on when Peter and I did the podcast, is that I switched so many guys around that I crossed a guy off to move him down and then forget him. Like, I didn't have Cesaro on the list at all either, and I meant to rank him. So if I didn't rank Morales, that's just a terrible job by me. I deserve a demerit for that. Smack in the face, even. He should have been somewhere near 50. So that was a bad job by me if I left him off.
Hmm. Well,
yeah,
and
you
JR,
your shitty guys on your list.
And JR, you had Pedro at 82.
Okay, so I had him pretty low.
82.
I mean, but yeah, I think he just ranks low in like matches, like you know, promo. I have to say, like, whatever. Great presence, great jump up. You know, cool guy, but. When you just look at some of the other guys, maybe I could have had him a touch higher. I'm looking at my list now. I know there's some I'd move lower. But overall, I think he just, you know, the matches aren't there for me to really get him much higher.
Well, yeah. And I mean, we have to take into account demographic. I mean, how many of us really, other than the jobber stuff we've watched in the 80s, how many of us really watched Pedro in his peak live? I mean, really none of us. So it was very, in our defense, well, yeah, that's true. Pampero. I mean, in our defense, it's very hard for us to grade Pedro's body of work when we didn't really watch. I mean, yes, we could watch tapes and stuff, but I mean, there, and let me tell you something, go to the network collections. There are some great Pedro matches from the 70s. So, everyone listening out there, go to the network, go to the collections. There's a great amount of good Pedro stuff out there. And
one
as for
thing about our boy Ron,
Yeah, and as for Palomo, check out there's some really fun – he did some good fun TNT skits cooking food and with his mom and being all weird and making fucking fucking ships out of WWF magazine pages. It was very strange, but entertaining, I have to say for that. So, any event, I give it 2 stars. Rude was a little better in this match, but Hillbilly Jim's just Hillbilly Jim. Graham didn't have an official time. He said around 8 minutes. One trope that Rude had was, of course, because, you know, the gyrating and everything. Anytime he got hit with a move involving his crotch, he sold it like, you know, like it got cut off like some Yamaguchi or whatever. That was always very funny.
They're going to say Yakov Shmerinov. I was like, what happened to him?
Yakov Shmerinov. Maybe he was in a movie in Top 10 in 1988. Maybe he was in Twins. No. I mean, he used to sell that like there was no tomorrow. But, I mean, it was Hillbilly Jim. It was what it was. It was a holdover thing for Rude. We did have the stuff at the Rumble on with Warrior, and we'll get more into that over time. That's got to be established still. So we're still kind of in between, and this was actually established back at the December house show, so this was already booked. So this was just a throwaway thing to, you know, keep Rude over as a heel. Hillbilly's pretty much done at this point. You know, we'll see him do a few more things here and there, but he's pretty much cooked. He's pretty much – he may have already start doing backstage stuff by now. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I don't think this match, I know we talk about JR about Rude and in-ring and stuff, but I don't think this should be an indictment of him. I mean, he's wrestling Hillbilly Jim, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah. No. actually, I think it was a positive, because I think he did carry the match, and his selling was great. So.
No, it was good enough for what it was. He did the best he could, but I think we will really see Rude kind of fire up the guns as we move ahead. But 2 stars for me. A little over 8 minutes, not bad, and it, you know, it shows that Rude's slowly working his way up into a decent level of work rate.
All right, big feud raging on next as Ted DiBiase takes on the former slave Hercules, rematch from November. DiBiase's rocking the swank green, Virgil's with him. Fink announces that Virgil's banned. Ted tries to pay off the ref, but that doesn't work, so Virgil finally leaves. Herc comes out to a big pop, and the crowd is hyped. Rod says Herc is exposing his wrath as he comes at Ted with the chain. Things spill outside, and they brawl till Ted gets posted. Herc controls inside, unloading strikes and rattling Ted all around the ring. Herc slams Ted and goes for the full Nelson, but DiBiase gets the ropes to break it right away. Herc shoves him out and slams him hard on the mat. Herc won't let him in, as Al says Ted is really missing Virgil tonight. Back inside, Ted lands a shot to the gut and slings him hard to the floor. He unloads the fists and chops and slams him on the floor as well. Ted smashes Herc with an elbow off the top and chokes away, gets 2 off a clothesline. Herc tries to come back, but DiBiase scoops him up and clotheslines his neck across the top rope and goes to a chin lock. Herc tries to work free, but DiBiase cranks away. Herc finally busts out. DiBiase catches him with a nice power slam for 2. It was really a perfectly executed one. Ted goes back to the chin lock. Hercules powers out, and that leads to a double clothesline. Herc comes back with a small package for 2. DiBiase comes back with a slam and heads up top, but Herc pops up and slams him off the top and punches away. Herc swarms him with hard offense, but DiBiase scoops the leg, puts his feet on the ropes to leverage a roll-up, and gets a sneaky win again over Hercules. Virgil comes out and decks Herc, but Herc fights them both off, and then Fink announces that Hercules has now won by DQ because Virgil came out. And Rod and Al rejoice that Herc is free at last. He needed this win to become free, I guess. I thought it was a really fun match. It was crisply worked with some nice heat. Herc has been impressive as a face, more than I remember. I've already been impressed with him as a heel. I thought he was impressed by his face here as well. And Ted walked right through him to this one. So I thought he really held up his end of the bargain. Ted kind of held his hand a bit. And it's been a nice feud. The Herc face run isn't going to go far, though, if he can't get a win on DiBiase at some point. And I think they're almost just about up. And he really never got one over on Ted. They kind of give him the in-name-only win here. And I get them trying to rebuild DiBiase as well because of him just taking the beating, you know, month after month with Savage all through 88. So it's fine. But if you had any plans for Herc, he's not really getting the rub that he needs. So that all said, I'll piece it all together. I really like the match. 3 stars. I thought these guys have a good chemistry, and Herc has been fun in this role. So what do you got, Scott?
I gave this match a pretty good grade. Let me look and see what I did. I gave it 3.5. I actually gave it a notch above. I had a lot of fun. It was a great match. 12:41 your total. Hercules really brought the goods. I got to say, when he's motivated, and we've seen it much more, JR, than we did when we were just watching pay-per-views. If you're watching the nooks and crannies of these years, when Hercules is motivated, he can put on a pretty good match, you know, with what he's got.
I enjoyed him right up almost until the end of his. I enjoyed him really up until the end of the heel run. Is when you felt a little stale and he was about time. But even then, like that match with Jake at SummerSlam's not bad. You know, he had some stuff earlier in '88 that wasn't bad. Some of the war, you know, we had that one kind of freaky warrior match that was good. But no, he's been more good than bad. Like I'm starting to feel like he's a guy that kind of got a bad rep as a worker. When you look back and examine a lot of his stuff, he's fine.
Yeah. No. And DiBiase. I mean, DiBiase sells well anyway. When you give him enough time, you know, this is another reason why it's really great to watch the nooks and crannies of these years instead of just the pay-per-view matches or even the Science Main events, because a lot of these guys that you think really have like no talent and they're kind of hacks and everything, they really know how to bring the goods when they get time to do it. You know, maybe just some of these guys were better when, you know, everyone goofs that, you know, Greg Valentine's at his best, 35 minutes into a match. In some cases, that's actually true. Maybe not 35 minutes, but, you know, you give Hercules 4 minutes and you're like, oh, God, that was dreadful. But you give him, you know, just almost 13 minutes with somebody that can kind of help him along, and you end up getting a good match. And I think it's a great example of that. It was a fun back and forth. DiBiase was very athletic, moving around and bumping like crazy for Herc's power moves. When you give guys time to be able to really establish something, you know, you're going to get something good. So I thought it was really, I thought it was really fun. I think Hercules, I don't know, from a local perspective, I don't know why Herc couldn't just win clean. I mean, it's the Garden. It's not like it's WrestleMania or anything, you know. I don't see why a clean win would have hurt, you know, or had Virgil try to come in and screw it up. I mean, they did kind of have Virgil screw it up, but I think he should have legitimately screwed it up.
Right, he could have hit DiBiase by accident and Herc pulls him up or something.
Yeah, they should have done something like that instead of this weird kind of referee referral decision or some bullshit. That stuff doesn't fly with me. So that's kind of a bummer. I might have even given it – had Herc gotten the win, I might have even bumped it up to 4 stars. But the problem is since we don't do quarters, this match is not anywhere near as good as Rockers Busters. And I don't think, and I gave that 4 stars. I couldn't see me giving this 4 stars anyway. But 3.5 for Hercules match is pretty impressive, Steve. And I really enjoyed it, top to bottom.
I thought the ref should have taken the money. I thought he should have taken the money and got on the mic and said, "Listen, I'm old. I'm on Social Security. This is Manhattan. You know, my apartment's expensive. I'm taking the cash." I thought that would have been great. I love the spot where DiBiase used his feet to break the full Nelson instead of his, you know, his hands. Uh-huh. I just thought it was really well done. There was a long chin lock at one point that sort of bored me a little bit, but they got out of it kind of just in time. Ted DiBiase is the kind of guy I think that sometimes I focus so much on. When thinking back to him, I think so much about his gimmick and his promos and kicking the ball, but I forget what a great worker he was. And this was a great match to just remember. Like, he has an awesome power slam in the match, and he's just taking some great bumps. And I really, like you guys, really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good little heel win until, of course, it's reversed there at the end, which I thought was a little weird. But I gave it 3 stars as well. I debated for a while between 3, 3.5, and then I was like, well, do I like it more or less than Honky Tonk Bret Hart, which I gave 3 stars. I said, ah, they're probably about the same. So I settled on 3 stars. But I did really enjoy it. I just wish maybe we could add some fun with that old Kaji ref taking the money at the beginning. I was thinking about that championship match from the Attitude Era. I don't remember. I think it was maybe Mankind and Rock, where Vince was at ringside and he kept like changing the steps of the match and like having Fink announce it if it was still Fink at the time.
Yeah.
He'd be like, "Tell him it's an ODQ, tell him it's an ODQ," and then there'd be the announcement. So I was like kind of thinking of that, and I was like, "Oh, it'd be so great if this ref just took the money and like told Fink to announce some new stipulation."
Virgil
or whatever,
can stay.
But, it's just been announced. Virgil is allowed to stay. The guy's got the $100 bills falling out of his pockets the whole time. But yeah, no, I enjoyed it. 3 stars as well.
The DiBiase in ring thing you mentioned is interesting because, you know, we talked to like Warrior always delivering in his big matches and you know, where Rude stands, and DiBiase, I feel like never, I don't know if it's that he never got outside of Savage, like the great people to work with in his big matches, or just didn't click, but I thought that hurt him come GWE time last year. And I dropped him because of it a bit, because I feel like he just never had that big match. And you have to almost rely on stuff like this for him to really show off what he could do. If you look at his big match pay-per-view record, and I'm just talking wins, I'm just talking quality matches, he'd have like fine matches, but like very good and above, very limited. And honestly, after Savage, like, I don't know if he ever had another, but again, look who he's put in with. So it's like, okay, so did he ever really have the chance to showcase these Beefcake and Snuka and, you know, coked up, broken neck Jake, you know, it's like by the time he's really, and then he's in the tag team. So it's like, I don't know if he ever really got the Virgil. Like, so I don't know if he ever really got the shot to show it when you look at his roster of guys he had to feud with in the big shows. But he's an interesting guy in that he never really had those big matches for his resume.
You hear guys from the territory area talk about territory area. The territory era talk about what a great worker he is. And I let that slip my mind because I focus when I think of him, like I said, on kicking the basketball away or kicking everyone out of the pool, trying to buy the title. Mm-hmm. I think more of the gimmick, you know, and this was a really like a good match. If you want to see what those territory era guys were saying, you really see how great he really was in the ring. So I appreciated that about being able to watch this card just as like something to put away as a wrestling fan to remember, you know, remember more fondly his work specifically.
All right, and something I was finally anticipating, because they had a great match back in August of 87, and that is Outlaw Ron Bass, we mentioned before, back out in his hat, still looking for Central Park for his concert.
He just got back from the Oasis.
Taking on Tito Santana. That was a sneaky gem, Scott, if you remember, back in August of 87. That was a really fun match, these two guys
had. Yes. Yes.
This one, Rod calls Tito the Ariba Man, and it's always great, of course, to see him out here. Bass stalls taking off his hat. Of course, he is bald. Rod and Al catches up on all that. That went down at Saturday's main event. Bass cracks a hard elbow out of the gate, but Tito retaliates and then hits the flying forearm. For one, Rod says Bass is very angry. Tito smothers Bass with quick offense, but Bass eventually spikes him into the top buckle to cut him off. The crowd turns on this one a bit as Bass methodically beats on Tito, nabbing near falls. Al says maybe the hair loss has helped Bass as he's moving around quicker than normal and not like the elephantine creature he usually moves like. Bass cuts through some Tito comeback attempts and eventually clotheslines Santana across the top rope for two. Beaver shows up, puts on the Outlaw's hat and grabs Betsy. Bass comes out and Brutus tangles with him, shoves him inside, and Tito sneaks up, rolls him up for the win. This is really disappointing. It never got going. It really just existed for Beefcake to fuck with Bass more after earlier. Wasting of Tito. I wish they gave Tito something better here and just whatever. And maybe made on Tito perfect and put Beefcake and Bass one last time. Could have been pretty good. But I went a star and a half. I was hoping for more, even though I knew it was probably not going to come, because I think that August of 87 match was just, you know, lightning striking once, not going to happen again. And of course, like I said earlier, just a chance for them to have Beefcake out there. And like we did mention, this is the last time we're going to see Ron Bass, too. So his final match for us here tonight. Why don't we talk about the match first, Steve and Scott, and then we can kind of talk about what Bass does after, if anything. Steve, what'd you think of the match?
I thought Tito set a really good pace early. I was excited to watch Tito kind of, you know, again, just to see him out of context of a feud, kind of just watch him work. So I was disappointed when inevitably Brutus showed up. And by the way, he's wearing the tightest jeans, these stonewashed tight jeans. He better have a nice pair of boxes on, because if he splits those things, his balls are going to be flapping all over Manhattan. I mean, his jeans are so tight. Tito sold, you know, steals a win because of the run-in. But like, nobody cares about Ron Bass. Just nobody cares that he's out there, or that him and Brutus have this thing going on. Like, it's just not over. People are done with it. People always are going to look back and think of the X on the TV screen. That's about where this feud should have began and ended. So I was disappointed that they kind of – that again, kind of stole – what could have been maybe a better match, like you said. I gave it 2 stars. Maybe I was being generous, but
you were.
Yeah, it's right around in that range, 1.5 to 2 stars. If someone was like, no, you got to give it 1.5, I'd be like, all right. You know, it was like right in that range. If it, like Scott said, if there was quarters, I would have probably given it 1 1¾. But eh.
Yeah, Bass's final TV match is the 2:27 prime time against Ron Garvin. Other than that, it's all pretty much just house shows in prime time, but nothing significant. Give us your thoughts, Scott, and then we can talk about where he goes after this.
Yeah. Your match time, shortest match of the night, just 6:35, mercifully. Once I gave it a star. Once the hair was cut, nobody fucking cared about him anymore. In a lot of people's eyes, in a national sense, that feud ended when Brutus cut his hair on Saturday night's main event. So at this point, I mean, I know a lot of smarter fans obviously understood that, you know, that, all right, this is here, just fill some time. And Brutus was coming out for revenge after what Bass did, earlier in the show. So I get that and people get that, but, yeah, this is just a way to kind of fill and kind of spell the crowd for the last match. Mm-hmm. No fault on Tito. Tito, you know, no one can ever – one thing you got to say about Tito, no one will ever blame Tito for taking a match off. He gives you everything every match. Tito doesn't care. We always said there was always a – you know, throughout the years, it was always, quote, Vince guys. And Tito was a Vince guy. It didn't matter what was going on or what needed to be done. Tito went out and got the job done regardless. And that's why Tito is one of the most respected guys in the history of the WWF. And he was on a lot of people's lists, definitely up in the I think I had him in the 30s on my list, because the guy never took a match off. Didn't matter whether it was a throwaway match, tag title, IC, you know, main event, opener, didn't matter. Tito never took a match off. So I'll give him that for here. And that's probably he earns most of this star. Ron Bass was just cooked. Again, I think people stopped caring once Brutus cut his hair on national TV. I don't think anybody gave a shit about him anymore. But again, this show was this match is pretty much nothing more than fill while people went to go take a leak or take a shit before the main event. So that's pretty much all this was. And now Ron Bass and his great hair.
He wrestled in the Independence before retiring in 1991 due to injuries. So that's about it. He wrestled a match in 05 at Wrestle Reunion, teamed with Larry Zbysko against Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda. And then they both starred in the movie Silent Times, which was released in 2018. Played a 1920s professional football coach named Coach Joseph Arcaris. He passed away, of course, in March 2017, so about 2 years ago. The outlaw left us. Was hospitalized due to a burst appendix and then had complications following the surgery and passed away. So that's it. Not much more to his career from here for the outlaw.
I almost died that way in 2003.
From appendix?
Swear to God, my appendix ruptured while I was at college. They, I knew something was wrong, and I went to the emergency room, and they basically just gave me a lot of Demerol and said the surgeon will be there in the morning. And I woke up to hear the surgeon screaming in the hallway, "Does anyone know what emergency appendectomy is in this fucking place?" And, it was like 97%. Yeah,
what fucking war chop shop are you in?
Yeah, well... I was in Fredonia, New York, which you've probably never even heard of.
I have heard of it, actually.
You can imagine the hospital there is called Brooks Memorial Hospital, not exactly Cedars-Sinai. They, by the time they got it out, it was pretty much totally ruptured. I was there for a few weeks and ended up having to get a bowel resectioning at a real hospital in Buffalo a few months later to get it better. So, yeah, poor outlaw. I didn't know that was how he died, but. Yeah, shit, that almost happened to me.
All right, well, pick things up a bit. The Fink comes out and runs down the card for next month, and then that brings us to our main event. Huge rematch from November as the Big Boss Man is still looking to take out Hulk Hogan for good. We get a huge pop for Hogan as he comes out, and we get some stalling to start as the ref demands Slick to get to the floor and that the nightstick be cleared from the ring. Hogan unloads with the right hands and drops Boss Man on the clothesline to get us going. Slick comes in, but Hulk shoves him to the corner, hits a sweetback suplex on Boss Man. Hogan snags the handcuffs and locks Slick to the post and paintbrushes his head. The crowd is revved up as Hogan mows down Boss Man and drops elbows for mocking Slick's dancing and slapping him in the face. Hulk easily slams Boss Man, kicks him before heading back out to slap Slick again. Hogan keeps the assault out of the ring, eventually gets caught with his head down, and eats an awkward clothesline. Boss Man buries Hogan with a stiff pile driver, as things have really turned quite suddenly. Boss Man unlocks Slick and then works over Hogan with a calm power beating. Slick sneaks into some choking as well, as Boss Man rattles Hogan with a hard spine buster. Hulk survives and shoves Boss Man to the floor. Slick chases Slick around before walking right into a side slam. Bossman follows a splash for two, but Hogan blows out of it and hulks up. Hogan clotheslines Bossman outside, but Bossman pulls him out and shoves him to the post. Bossman cuffs Hogan's hands together, slides in, and Hogan beats the count, but the big man keeps punching and back raking away. Hogan whips Bossman to the corner. He ends up crotched on the top rope. Hogan breaks the cuffs to a huge pop, takes down Boss Man and drops the leg twice, but stops the count at two. Instead, Hogan goes out and gets the nightstick, clocks the ref to draw a disqualification, and Boss Man and Slick scamper off. Hogan poses with Slick's hat after. That was an interesting finish, but it keeps things boiling. And this was a hell of a match. I thought it was good shine for Boss Man, a dose of revenge for Hogan, a really strong main event with a hot pace and lots of fun spots. And again, it keeps things going. I mean, you kind of had Hogan give the visual pin. So at this point, it's like, why not just pin him? I mean, or why have him get the pin? Why not have him hit the leg and then don't stop the count of two? Just get up off of the leg and grab the nightstick from Slick or something. So I thought there's a little bit of intricacy there where they're trying to keep Boss Man strong, but they still kind of made him look like a bitch. But all in all, really fun match. I went 3.5 stars. I really dug it. I thought it was a hot one. What did you think of this one, Scott?
I gave it 3.5 as well. Mm-hmm. It definitely deserved it. Your match time, 9:29, good length. When we go back, when we get to if anyone ever wanted to rank from 85 to 93, like the top five Hogan feuds, I think this one has to be up there, maybe at five, behind, you know, like Andre and Piper, you know, Warrior, you know, that kind of thing, Savage. Because over this, like, 3-month stretch, let me tell you something. Boss Man has given everything he can,
mm-hmm.
whether it's promos, in-ring. He is definitely holding up his end of the bargain. And Hogan has really not taken this feud off. Yes, the end of this match really annoyed me because Like, why can't we look past our nose? How do I look past? Past the glasses on our nose or whatever that term is. Where, all right, we get it. We know Hogan is over. He's the number one guy in the company, mm-hmm. whether he has the belt around his waist or not. Why do we have to, like, prove it? You know what I mean? Like, why can't we just – why can't he just drop the leg and then instead of going for the pin, freak the fuck out? Why do we actually have to have a visual pin where Boss Man's out? Like, why do we need that extra little goose there? You know what I mean? Like, that was not necessary.
Or have Slick come in and hit him.
Right.
During the pin and break it up. And, okay, Slick saved him. That's different to me than Hogan, getting up during the pin and then just getting the nightstick and hitting him anyway. Slick come in, Hogan stands up even, grabs a nightstick and hits Boss Man or something like that. I know they were trying to make it like Hogan really wanted to just beat the shit out of Boss Man for revenge, which is fine. But, yeah, we didn't need him, picking him up during the count. I just thought that was, a step too much.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of felt bad for Boss Man or for Slick because would you want to have – handcuffs full of Hogan's, fuck shit junk ball sweat all over the fucking handcuffs. And it's like, oh, I'm pulling handcuffs out of my tights. I'm like, oh, gross. But anyway, the ending put aside, I mean, Boss Man has really, I mean, there's a guy who gets it. I mean, we all thought, I mean, I remember before I really watched, I vaguely remember him in Crockett when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. But when Boss Man got to WWF, I mean, I'm like, oh, here's this guy. Hey, that's kind of cool. But no way, man. Like, he got it. He knew what the fuck to do. Like, obviously, when you're only there a short period of time and, like, your first major feud is with, like, arguably the hottest guy in the fucking world, obviously you have some type of reputation. You know what I mean? So you're not – I mean, it wasn't just some nobody that was handed, the guy for him to handle – before we get to the real WrestleMania stuff. So obviously there was some kind of respect there for Boss Man to be given Hulk fucking Hogan, for this, mm-hmm. for this bridge feud. And he's delivered in spades, regardless of how it's booked and how it looks a little shitty at times, like the end of this match. Doesn't take away from the fact that, I mean, that Boss Man promo earlier was really good. And Hogan's, not taking the feud off, just kind of waiting around for his chance later on. He's really working it, and I applaud him for that, Steve. And it makes for a tremendous match. It was a tremendous match.
Yeah, Paul and I watched this match earlier, and first thing I thought of was, wow, it's 5 years later, and Hulk is still the king of MSG. Mm-hmm. They loved him. He came out to a huge pop. I thought it was an awesome pile driver by Big Boss Man earlier in the match, and it's like you really see Hogan showing a lot of trust in him. To let him pile drive him like that, I thought that was really good. When Hogan broke the chains of the handcuffs, my daughter popped so hard for that. Like, she thought that just blew her mind. Like, I didn't know she even knew what handcuffs were, but she did, and she couldn't believe you could break them like that. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I also was a little, bummed, I guess, maybe by the finish. Like, he breaks the count one time, and then he does it the second time where he blocks the count with his hand.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even understand why he's snapping here almost. It's like you've gotten revenge on Slick at this point where you slapped him around 6-7 times outside the ring. You slam this guy, you drop the leg again. He should have just taken the pin. I didn't love that either. Sometimes I feel like we blame Hogan for that, but I don't know for sure that it's his fault.
Doubt he said I want to pin him. So I mean, I don't pin this one on him, but it happened. So,
but yeah, I didn't like it. It hurt. It kept it at 3.5 for me. This maybe could have been a 4 mm-hmm. For me if he just drops the leg and pins him 1-2-3. Maybe not, but definitely with the finish, I wasn't going to go that high. So I went 3.5. Again, I was nervous. I was going to be a little high on that, but. I don't know. I mean, I had fun watching it earlier with Paul. Like, we had fun watching it. She loves the Hulkster. She's got a Hulkster lunchbox, which she calls a suitcase. That you're watching thinks it's a suitcase. But she does. So we had fun with this one. And, yeah, what a great, great, great ending to the card. Good main event. Like, a really good – it felt like a main event. That's what I'll say is it felt worthy of the title of main event. Like, that was a main event of a house show in January in Madison Square Garden. Felt legit, felt big, felt important. And Hulkster, and they showed the hallway and Hulk walking into the ring. It just felt big to me. And, 5 years later, almost to the day of him winning the title. And he's, you know, he's still the king of MSG, so you got to give it to him. The Hulkster was the man back in 89.
For sure. And they've really done a great job, like you mentioned, Scott, like getting Boss Man to this level, making him a believable, credible threat. And it's been a nice feud for Hogan, diverging off the title stuff, Savage still running as champ, and giving him something to, you know, eat for a while. And then, of course, we'll see the Twin Towers play the role they'll play in the coming weeks as well. So overall, they get a really good push. All right, let's do some awards, and then we'll wrap shit up. So let's start with our match of the night. Let's get over here to the tracker. All right, match of the night. I actually, so this is a tricky one because I had two rated at 3.5. I liked them both. I went with Hogan Bossman over Rocker's Brainbusters, and that's only because I really thought it had, like Steve just illustrated, the big match feel. I thought it felt like a big deal. It felt like a heavyweight fight. It felt like the main event. And to me, that just brought the atmosphere a little bit higher than Rocker's Brainbusters.
I mean, I gave it 4 stars. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rocker's Brainbusters is probably going to be on my top 100 most televised matches list, or televised matches mm-hmm. list. It was just, it's one of my favorites of all time. I got to go with it.
Yeah, I wrote down on my notepad, I wrote down the Boss Man match, the Rocker's match, and the Honky Tonk Bret Hart one. It's just ones to consider for that. Not sure all three will make it, but I just wanted to make note of them after watching this. But I'll go with Rockers and Brainbusters. That was my highest rated one.
I mean, that Hogan Boss Man match is awesome, but I mean,
yeah,
right there, yeah, close.
All right, the Cousin Junior for the worst match to me is a layup tonight, and that is old White Lightning himself taking on the Conquistador, Jose Estrada.
That's really what they should have had in the graphics. The graphics should have said White Lightning versus the Conquistador. I think it might have been more entertaining. I would have given a 1/4 star just for the names.
Oh. Steve, you with that one?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. All right, the Andre the Giant Award. He was not here tonight for MVP. I went with Hogan. You know, you mentioned to Steve how over he was. I thought he worked hard. He looked great. He's just the biggest star on these nights in the non-Andre division. But especially without Savage on the card, too, it really stood out just how big of a megastar Hogan is. So that was my choice.
I wanted to go with the Garden just because I love Madison Square Garden. I thought the crowd was great all night, but I'll go with Hulk as well. Like I said, Hulk's king. Had to give it to Hulk.
Yeah, whenever you're going to have a MSG house show that has no, where no belts are in the building, mm-hmm. but Hogan is, there's a reason why you do that. There's a reason why you can have an MSG house show without a tag title, IC title, or world title match, and that's because of the red and yellow. No doubt about it.
All right, our Sandy Beach Award for the biggest loser of the evening. Danny Davis was saved tonight by White Lightning because I thought Tim Horner looked fucking terrible, wrestled terrible for a guy that's kind of supposed to be positioned as like an up-and-comer versus Davis, who's just there, you know, filling spots. It was more disappointing to me. So I thought he's someone that you expect a little bit more from in this spot.
We gave it to Danny Davis back at Survivor Series. I don't know if we gave it to him before that. Well, no, because Sandy Beach was the man. So we did give it to Danny Davis last July, the July 88 house show. Mm-hmm. So he's already won it a few times. Oh, he won it on Saturday's main event. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's
we
had
were really
some bad
carrying
ones.
Him at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's had some bad ones.
Yeah.
No, I think that might have been the one where he got kneed in the head.
Yeah. No, I definitely give it to Tim Horner here.
Yeah, you can give a worst award, and I'm probably giving it to Horner on this night. Like, you can call it worst. Just about anything. So, yes, I'm all in on Horner as worst worker.
He's fucking terrible. All right, best moment of the night. I want the Rockers hot tag. I thought that was the biggest pop. It was a hot moment. You know, Sean taking that shit kicking and selling and selling and selling, finally getting the tag to Marty. I thought really, to me, it was the highlight of the night.
I went with Hogan breaking the cuffs, looking up to the man upstairs. When I was a kid and Gorilla would say that, I thought there was a man upstairs. I thought I was a smart kid, but apparently I wasn't. A smart kid, because I had no idea that that was a reference to God. I was apparently an idiot. It took me to like 15 to realize there was nobody up there. Hogan was talking about God. But yeah, Hogan looking up to the heavens and then breaking the cuffs was, I thought, so cool.
We need to do a show of like stuff like that. Because like mine is that I thought like Superstars and Challenge were live, and I wondered why they didn't have to go to church and they got to go to like wrestling shows and stuff. And like Superstars was actually live at like 11 a.m. on a Saturday.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so we need to show stuff like that, like shit you believed as a kid in wrestling and all that. All right, Scott, what'd you have for this one?
Yeah, no, the hot tag was crazy because, well, I mean, that match was just fantastic and the place went nuts and Tully and Arn sold it like, you know, like the man upstairs just came down. It was pretty awesome. Yeah, no, definitely that.
All right. Morocco award for the most juiced up, homie of the night. I went with Hercules on this evening. I thought,
yeah, me too.
Looking extra bulky.
Yep.
Yeah. Unanimous. Me too. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And also when he cut his promo, the camera was way too close to his teeth and he doesn't have good teeth. So if we had a worst teeth award, I'd give that to him.
Yeah, that'll make it tricky to track. All right. And finally the Patera award for the worst hair of the night. I went with old White Lightning yet again. I thought his Cabbage Patch, doll haircut was pretty terrible.
The worst.
Yeah, no, it's pretty awful. Pretty awful.
All right, finally, our grade out of 10. I like this show a lot. It had a lot of good stuff. It had some crap. We've talked about a lot of these MSGs as kind of having that balanced effort where a lot of stuff is just, you know, good, solid. But here I feel like we had some real variance. We had some crap and we had some really, really good stuff. So I went 6.5, which is pretty high for me for a house show. I did that back in December as well. So I think when we have, like, you know, unless there's like a real all-time classic match, which in my mind, in my grades, I didn't have that, but I had some really, really good stuff. I you know, 6.5 is kind of my peak unless we start getting into like hollow ground territory for house shows just because they're so long and there's so much other junk filling out the card. So 6.5 to me is a real respectable MSG house show grade. What'd you have, Steve?
Man, I went back and forth between 6.5 and 7. 6.5 and 7. Cursing you guys for not having quarters. Back and forth, back and forth. I think you're right. I think to get to 7, I think that's almost like the house show of house shows, you know, like a pinnacle night. So I'll go with 6.5. I think it's fair.
Yeah, I mean, for a comparison for the Rumble, Scott and D'Amato had 6.5. I had 7. Like, I think you could put this on par with the 89 Rumble when you look at it up and down. So feels right in that area. What'd you have, Scott?
You know, it's funny with you guys with the 6.5 threshold. I mean, I've given MSG house shows, some pretty awesome grades over the years. I think I've given 7s. I gave a 7 to the July 88. Mm-hmm. I've given some high grades.
You gave an 8 in December.
Yeah. I gave an 8 to the December house show cause it was that good. That Garvin Hammer match is awesome. Now, I mean, honestly, you put that Rockers Busters match at that December December house show, and it's a fucking 9. That Horner Estrada shit show and that terrible opener stops this from being higher than a 6.5 because, I mean, anything that has that rock. I mean, Rocker, those the three matches we mentioned: Rockers Busters, the Hogan Boss Man, and the Brett match. This show could have been a 7, but there is just some, that opener sucks, is not good. And that Tim Horner stuff is just unwatchable shit. And that kind of keeps it at that level for me. So I'm going to give it a 6.5 too, even though it has arguably one of my favorite MSG matches of all time, that Rockers Brainbusters match. But
what
unfortunately,
did you guys
I was going to say 6.5 is about where I can go. What do we get, Steve? What do you think?
What did you guys give the, was it January 87 at MSG where they had that almost 5-star match with the three guys from the three feuds from WrestleMania 3 on each side? It was like an elimination match.
That was February 87.
I gave it a 6.5. JR gave it a 6. Kelly gave it a 7.
Okay. That's one I remember just off the top of my head being really good. I probably would have been with Kelly at 7 there. So yeah. I guess that's kind of like.
So that match, Scott and Kelly had a 4.5. I had it at 4. And then Jeff and I did that one, too, on Jeff Wins Wrestling.
Yeah, for those that may not, for those that may not know what we're talking about, it's Ricky Steamboat, Roddy Piper, and the JYD against Harley Race, Savage, and Adonis, which, I mean, that's probably one of the greatest, like, six-man heel teams of all time.
That's making my list. Top 100 televised matches list for sure.
I'm going to have to nominate it, Steve. I don't know if that will get nominated. Just don't do the whole show. Just do that match.
Okay. All right.
So let's...
I got scolded.
let's talk some stuff. We'll talk about that in a minute. Scott, we'll be back in 2 weeks with the infamous February 3rd, 89 main event. Of course, is one of the most historical ones. Peter Winston will be with us there. And then as we start really kind of the trek to Mania over the next month and a half or so. Other than that, I don't think I have much else going on, actually. A bit of a slow stretch. We may have a war zone coming later this week. We'll see. If we can get back on track with Chadley. But other than that, that's it. Just kind of holding pattern. What do you got going on?
Well, last week we had a tremendous episode of the main event. Your boy Brandon Howard joined us, myself, Nate, and Steve. We talked about the year as a whole business-wise for WWE for 2018 and looked ahead to 2019 with things like AEW and all these guys leaving, et cetera. We did our most recent TNA pay-per-view recap. We did a little bit of a Elimination Chamber predictions. But I recommend everyone please – I mean, I listen to every main event, but this one in particular. Brandon was great. It was a good thumbnail sketch on how 2019 could be business-wise for WWE. It's very good. I highly recommend it. Please check it out. Episode 120.
Okay. Steve, you want to talk about what you got going on in the world of sportscasters?
Yeah, the sportscasters, I just started season 9. I basically debuted when these guys did in 2011. My first show was the day after the Oregon-Auburn BCS championship game, the one that Cam Newton won. Mm. So I've been plugging at it for quite a while. 2014, Sports Illustrated named it one of the best sports podcasts of the year, which was pretty huge for me. And then The Athletic mentioned it in 2018, which was cool to get a nod again. I had Richard Deitch on the last podcast, I think, but I'm putting one up tomorrow. So if you're listening to this, it should be up. I have Jimmy Traina from SI on, and we talk about a bunch of different topics, New York topics. We talk about Mike and the Mad Dog, Howard Stern, if he's still relevant in 2018. We talk about Tony Romo as a color guy. It's a fun interview. Love having Jimmy on. And also I did something that I absolutely loved. The guy's name is John Dallapina, and he wrote for the New York Daily News for a long time.
Yes, I know. I know John.
Yeah, and he's now the VP of the senior VP of communications for the NHL. And we did 50 minutes on the 1994 New York Rangers and the 1994 playoffs. The Rangers just celebrated the 25th anniversary of that at the Garden. So I wanted to do something for that team because I love the Rangers, I love the Garden, and I love Pavel Bure in 1994. So that's like one of my favorite Stanley Cups ever. And John and I just totally kind of geek out for like almost 50 minutes. It was really fun. And John is like a huge Rangers fan. Kind of, he grew up in Queens and, you know, really had a really good perspective. It was really fun. It's one of the most fun things I've done. And, you know, we also did 15 minutes on the league and him switching from the media side to the league side. But you can find it on soundcloud.com/sports-casters. And you can follow me on Twitter @sports_casters for more information there. So probably more time than I should have took, but I appreciate you guys letting me get the plugs out.
Nope, no worries.
I gotta say, Steve, I'm gonna push my brother to listen to that. Obviously I'm a Bruins fan, but the rest of my family are all Ranger fans. And my brother, who that was one of the few times. Well, I shouldn't say that. My dad was a very emotional guy. I've seen him cry at funerals and stuff. But sports stuff, I've only seen him cry very few times. The first time I ever saw him cry was when I was 6, when we beat the Russians the Soviets in the 80 Olympics. The second time was June 14th, 1994, when the Rangers won K7. My dad was 6 when they won it in 1940. But my brother Chris, and I'm going to have him, and who's been, of course, on Place B podcast actually. He contends, and I'm curious. I'm curious if you guys talk about this. He contends, and he's a little biased that 1994. Eastern Conference Finals between the Rangers and the Devils may be the greatest 7-game series in the history of the NHL playoffs.
My guest hands down agrees with him.
Yeah, no, it's the greatest 7-game series ever. Yeah,
three double overtime games.
The guarantee.
Yeah. Oh, incredible hockey. There's a great box set that you can get for cheap on DVD now that has all 7 Devils games and all 7 Canucks games.
And really?
You can get it. Yeah, and you can get it now for like $30, you know, or something like that.
Get it from
my
brother. That's cool.
Yeah,
I'll definitely check it out.
If your brother or anyone even remotely likes the Rangers or followed that series, like, I'll stand behind this interview as being really fun. Like, it was just really cool. We really geeked out on it. We talked about all the different stages of the Rangers from regular season to trading Tony Amani to winning on that Nassau Coliseum for the first time in 5 years at the end of the regular season. You know, to that double series, which we go through, the two Stefan Matteau double overtime winners. And then we go all through the 7 games of the Stanley Cup and talk about the amazing game 3 where Pavel Bure scores an electrifying breakaway goal to just bring the house down in the first minute and then gets kicked out for high sticking before the period ends. Just unreal drama. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. Any Rangers fan will love that. So I'm glad I did it. I know it's niche, and you know, maybe someone like Justin is like, oh my god, I couldn't imagine sitting for 5 minutes of that.
I just did.
but like the way I, like, you know, like I said, I'm on 300 episodes. You know, you can only talk to, you know, SL Price about North Carolina basketball so many times, I guess.
You know? So. No, I'll have to check it out. So yeah, check it out, SoundCloud. Yes, I'll definitely pass that off. Yeah,
all
definitely.
Right. Two other things to also check out: BigLove34.ProBars.com, our message board home. All of the results of the GWWE Tag Team Project are out. We were referencing them earlier. You can find them there, all the way through number one. And then also we've started the nomination process, Scott, the project we opened up last week. The GWWE greatest televised match ever that includes matches that were televised in any form, pay-per-view, TV, web, WWE Network, streaming, anything throughout time. We have a Facebook group that you can ask for permission to join. We can add you there, PTBN GWWE-pay-per-view-TV-matches. If you just start searching that, it should come up. It's also linked at our other social media, and at BigLove34.ProWars.com actually has the full list of what's been nominated in chronological order. So this follows in line with our last 2 years' worth of projects, the singles and tag team, same rules, same, you know, specifications, and the rules are at the board as well. So be sure to check all that stuff out, get matches nominated, start watching, share your thoughts as you watch. This one should be a lot of fun. It's very different than the last two, because the last two you had to kind of do case studies and pick samples of wrestlers. There's a lot more of this. You're just kind of watching matches and grading them how you'd normally grade. So I think there's a lot more, you know, it's easier in some ways, but there's also should be a lot more depth to it too. So check all those out. Follow us on social media, Twitter, Place Number 2B Nation, Facebook.com/PlaceBNation, and on Instagram, Place Number 2B Nation as well. All right, for Steve and Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks' time. Everyone take care.
I'm